Good morning, and welcome to the February 8th HPB meeting. And a special welcome to our newest board member, Stuart Reed. Happy to have you on board, Stuart.
Thank you very much.
We are going to go ahead and get started with the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Debbie? Sure.
We have the minutes from the January 11th meeting. We will need a motion in a second.
I'll move to approve the minutes.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I just had one question.
Sure.
And maybe I'm wrong, but I seem to have remembered that on the number 8 item, 343 Jefferson, I thought that I had asked for a joint report from planning and
the
building department to understand the issues that occurred.
The matter was bifurcated, so that will be before you in March, at the March 8th meeting. And we will bring information. We have been in discussions with the applicant to provide that information with regard to the building department inspections and what happened.
Okay, so that's...
So that will be at the March 8th meeting. At the January meeting, the board approved the reconstruction of the roof.
Right.
And continued the remainder of the application to the March 8th meeting.
And we'll receive something that tells us historically what occurred.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll second the motion if it wasn't.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nope, that passes. Mr. Chair, at this point, I am going to turn it over to Nick Kalergis from the City Attorney's Office. He will be reading the lobbyist registration and swearing in of any members of the public wishing to speak today.
Thank you, Debbie, and good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Today's meeting of the Historic Preservation Board has been scheduled in a hybrid format with members of the board physically present in the commission chambers at Miami Beach City Hall and applicants, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 817-4834-7488#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which, again, is 817-4834-7488. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if they're participating by phone. Individuals who wish to provide testimony or submit evidence in person may appear in the commission chambers at Miami Beach City Hall. Before I swear in the public, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. At this time, I'd like to ask anyone, any members of the public, any members of staff who will be providing testimony today to please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony you'll provide in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, thank you, Nick. We do have a few requests for continuances this morning. The first application has actually been withdrawn by the applicant. This is HPB 21-0467, 7801 Atlantic Way. Since this application was not presented to the board, no action needs to be taken, and the application has been withdrawn. The next request is HPB 210486. This is 411 Michigan Avenue, 419 Michigan Avenue, and 944 Fifth Street. The applicant is requesting a continuance to the March 8th meeting. Staff has been meeting with the applicant for the past several months to refine the design. We had some initial concerns, and we believe the applicant is working very diligently to express those concerns, and we have no objection to continuing it to the March 8th meeting. Mr. Larkin is here
Yes.
on behalf of the applicant. No.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Board members, Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here as the applicant. I agree with everything that Debbie said. We appreciate a continuance until the March hearing.
Okay, thank you.
If the board members don't have any questions, we will need to open this to the public.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Neeson Kasdan and Michael Larkin, we are both here also representing file number 210481, 1901 Collins Avenue, seeking a continuance until March 8th.
Okay, let's take 411 Michigan first, Neeson. So are there any members of the public wishing to speak on HPB 210486? Seeing none, we can close the public hearing on that, and we will need a motion for the continuance of 411 Michigan.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So the application has been continued to the March 8th meeting. And I believe the request that Mr. Kasdan just spoke of is for HPB 210481, 1901 Collins Avenue. And Mr. Kasdan, it was the March 8th meeting that you're requesting the continuance
yes,
to?
Yes, Ms. Dakin.
Staff has no objection to that request. We would ask if a motion is approved to continue the item, we would ask that the board members keep the rather hefty package and return next month.
So, just one quick question. If we were to submit some revised drawings, would Monday be the deadline in response to some of the conditions that you had raised? Would Monday be the deadline?
If they're minor drawings and they're in response to staff's comments in the staff report, I would be happy to accept them on Monday, and we would need them electronically as well.
Thank you.
May I speak?
Yes. I don't know if we've opened the public hearing for this, Mr. Robbins.
Shall we?
Is required. Okay.
Okay. My name is Ken Harrison Robbins. I've already filed an appearance and submitted substantial comments and a graphic presentation for today. We haven't heard a reason why this matter should be continued. I'm here. I've been paid to appear here. My clients are here. My clients are waiting to speak and discuss and present either in person or by Zoom. They're expecting to be present. If there's a reason for their continuance, it hasn't been stated on the record, and we'd like to know why they're continuing it today and for what particular purpose do they need the matter to be continued. There should be some good cause.
Thank you, sir. Nick, does the applicant need to provide a reason for continuing, for the request to continue?
The board has the discretion to entertain the applicant's request. If any board members want to ask any questions of the applicant, this would be a good time to do so.
Board members?
I did hear the applicant say that they were resubmitting some drawings Monday. To address staff comments?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
That's one reason.
So does that mean I can leave my package here or I need to take it with me?
Well, let me talk about with Debbie offline. I'm not sure.
But there seems to be are they substantial changes? What are you doing?
They're not substantial changes, but we've also received in the last literally day or two commentary from other parties, which we'd like to address in our presentation, which we believe will be helpful for the board's deliberations.
Okay. Any other board members?
I just have a question. I mean, if
we do have more public comment via Zoom.
That was my question. If this is open for public comment and somebody is here and they need to speak,
on the issue, why can't they just speak? No?
I believe if we're discussing the continuance now, so any member of the public is welcome to comment on the continuance request.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
so should we continue to hear from anyone else from the public who might want to comment on the continuance?
Mr. Chair, we do have David Sein on Zoom with his hand raised.
That's for the 419 Michigan.
Oh.
You can ask him.
David, are you wishing to comment on this application or a previous request for continuance? David, you are on mute. If you could take yourself off of mute, if you would like to address the board. Okay, Mr. Chair, I don't see David taking himself off of mute.
Okay, if there's no additional public comment on the continuance, do we have a motion?
I move to continue this item to March 8th.
I'll second it.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion passes unanimously. The application is continued to the March 8th meeting.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Debbie, at this point, do we continue?
I have one also that she might not have been aware of.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Marrero, you have a request for continuance?
I do.
Okay.
Mickey Marrero, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Mr. Temporary Chair, members of the board, I'm here on behalf of 550 Washington Avenue. I recognize we had a continuance request last month. The reason we had that continuance request was because my client, Matthew Massa, who was significantly involved in this project, had to stay in France because of travel issues. He did come back. Fortunately, this is one of the reasons. Unfortunately, his mother is not doing in great health. He did have to fly back over the weekend. We were fully prepared today. Although we did send Debbie some minor changes in our visual presentation that we would love an opportunity to get into the US packet with some new lighting that is not in your packet, but I was going to present today. However, I checked in the code. Since we heard the item in November, we have only one more month where we can request a continuance if you all are willing to give it to us. This will be the last continuance we're able to request since we were heard in November, and March would be 120 days, so that Matthew can be here, and he really does want to be here. I would ask you one more month to continue to March. That would be our last opportunity, and it would give us a better chance to have him here and everybody available.
Okay, thank you, Mickey. I would be really anxious to hear a project today, but it seems like a reasonable request.
Yes, March is going to be a very busy month for us, so rest up, I guess.
Any board members have any questions as to the request for continuance?
No, I would move it. Does it sound we're going to
go on with it? Okay. Do we have a second? The public comment. Anyone from the public want to make comment on this request? I don't hear any. Any on Zoom? No? Okay. So we had a motion by Nancy?
A second.
Okay, all those in favor to the March 8th meeting?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. Thank you.
Passes. Thank you. Okay, so we are whittling down our agenda very quickly this morning. Our next application is HPB 170176, this is 1685 Collins Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness for the partial demolition, renovation, and restoration of the existing building, including the reconstruction of original interior floor plates, modifications to the rear cabana building, and site improvements. The application, this is for the Delano Hotel on Collins Avenue. It's a contributing building located in the Ocean Drive Collins Avenue Historic District. It's really an excellent example of Art Deco architecture with very strong post-war modern influences. In 1994, there were significant modifications made primarily to the interior. Philip Stark, the industrial designer, modified the interior to the point where a lot of original finishes and features were either demolished, removed, or covered up. So we welcome the current proposal, which is to bring back some of the original interior features, including the original octagonal columns. Within the front yard, in the porch area, driveway access portion of the property, the applicant is making some significant improvements, in staff's opinion, including removing that very tall hedge that has been there for nearly 20 years. And replacing it with low landscaping, which we believe will significantly enhance the view from the pedestrian perspective. The applicant is also making some ADA upgrades, including the construction of an accessible ramp at the front of the property. In staff's opinion, this introduction was very well designed and does not negatively impact the architectural integrity of the front of the building. They're also reducing the size of the curb cuts, which is very welcome by staff. Within the lobby, again, as I previously stated, they are proposing to restore certain elements. They are also proposing to reconstruct a portion of the mezzanine. This is allowed, even though the property is currently non-conforming due to FAR. There was a question on the ballot a couple years ago, which the voters did approve, which allows for the reconstruction of original floor plates within the existing building that have been removed over time. So staff is very supportive that original interior feature will also be brought back. Finally, the applicant is proposing to, toward the rear of the property, to reconstruct a portion of the exterior wall of what was the original dining room. Staff is supportive of that, as well as some minor rear yard modifications to the existing cabana structure. So we do have some minor comments, which are reflected in our recommendation in the draft order. It's attached to the report, but overall supportive of the project and are recommending approval. And I see Mr. Kasdan representing the applicant is here to give a presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Neeson Kasdan and Cecilia Torres Toledo of Ackerman LLP representing the applicant, Beach Hotel Associates, which is an affiliate of Kane International. I will give you a brief introduction to the ownership and the project itself. Then we'll turn it over to Jennifer McConney, who is the project architect, with words as well from Raymond Jungles, who is a landscape architect. With us here today is Jonathan Goldstein, the chairman and CEO of Kane International, and Kate Murtaugh, who is vice president. You'll hear briefly from Jonathan at the end of our presentation. I would like to just briefly address, if we could promote the slideshow, please. There we go. I would just like to briefly address that Kane International is a multinational investor in high-end real estate projects. It is chaired by Mr. Goldstein, who is based in London. They have projects in Europe and in North America as well. They are deeply invested in the Miami community in major projects on the other side of the bay, including 830 Brickell, Missoni Bahia, and Una, and they have a long-term commitment to this community. This project is about bringing back the original architecture of the Delano Hotel. If we can go to the next slide. Next slide, please. You see there the current condition of the Delano Hotel and its location. I think you're all pretty familiar with it. On the slides on the right-hand side include the western exposure facing Collins Avenue, and the slide next to that is the beach or pool area in the back of the Delano. Next slide, please. The Delano was designed and built in 1947. The architect was Robert Swartberg. If you'd indulge me for a second, Bob and Lillian Swartberg were my neighbors growing up on Flamingo Drive. I knew them well, and their boxer Dookie was one of my best childhood friends. He was a debonair man. When he would go out, he would always wear a blazer and an ascot, even when he was walking his dog. And that's reflective, I think, in the style of some of his architecture. Next slide, please. You see the original interiors of the Delano Hotel. It included the octagonal columns in the lobby, as well as murals on the wall. And what is in all historic photos we have seen, there is carpeting on the lobby floor. Next slide, please. In the 90s, the hotel was bought by Ian Schrager, and it was redesigned by Philippe Stark. And in that redesign, they removed a lot of the original historical elements and coloration of the property. So as you know, in the lobby, they clad the octagonal columns and made them circular. The color was taken out. The entire property was painted white. The front lobby and porch was secreted from public view by the hedge and drapes. That was what the redo entailed. Next slide, please. And the guiding principle behind the renovation of this property, in addition, I must note, a substantial capital investment in this property, more of which you will hear about, was although it was redone in the 90s, the major systems, electrical, plumbing, mechanical, air conditioning, as well as the concrete and structural work was not done. That's being done now. So this building will be around for the next 100 years. That's probably a $75 million or so investment. But in terms of design, what you see there is on the right, on the left, is the original Delano with the vertical bands of color, as well as the window boxes, which are architectural, highlighted in a color, offset color. In the middle, the Stark version, all white. And the right, you see what we are doing, as Jennifer will explain, is reintroducing the vertical color as well as highlighting the window boxes. Next. Also, one of the other major changes is to reintroduce the historic dining room that was on the east end of the property, which some of you might remember was removed by in the 90s by Stark. Only the northern wall remains. That will be rebuilt, although it will be open air, but the walls and the roof will be put on. The pool area will return more to what it was originally. There will be also an outside dining terrace extending from the rebuilt dining room. As you can see today, it is a completely different look, and among other things, it is totally inaccessible to people who are handicapped. Next. And of course, one of the major changes, and this is really the reason this item is before the board, because most of the other work is cosmetic and structural, is the redo of the lobby. The octagonal columns will be restored, and they will go into the light wells that you see above, similar to the original hotel. The wood flooring will be removed, and a terrazzo floor will be introduced with a similar pattern to that you will see on the front porch of the hotel. The mezzanine in the lobby will be recreated, and the original mezzanine bridge will be rebuilt. That was typical of hotels of this era, and it was removed, and murals will be reintroduced as well. So it's a substantial homage to the original historic architecture of Bob Swartberg. Next, please. And I think at this point in time, I'd like to bring up Jennifer McConney, and she will take you through some more of the details, and then we'll finish with Mr. Goldstein.
Good morning, everybody. Jennifer McConney with Studio MCG Architecture in Miami. As Neeson was saying, really one of the reasons we're here is most people come before you for an addition or changes to the facade, but we're actually here because we're restoring the building and also trying to rebuild back some of the floor plates that were removed in the 90s, as well as create ADA access into the building from the front and the rear. Right now, the only way that a person in a wheelchair could enter the building is actually on 17th Street through the basement, which is not a very humane way to access this building. Next slide. Also, right now, just we currently have two permits underway in the city, which are about halfway through for the restoration, concrete restoration, interior and exterior, and a complete window and door replacement. So that's actually ongoing right now. The work has already begun. This page outlines the six main reasons we're here. The front terrace, the restoring the historic terrazzo and creating the ADA access. Two are the removal of the 3-foot-wide round circular column surrounds that are in the lobby. We're going to take those off and put the octagonal columns back. We're also rebuilding portions of the mezzanine that were removed and creating that bridge that was there originally. Lobby flooring, we're also recreating some terrazzo or placing terrazzo in the lobby. And then we are adding back the diagonal wall that you can see in the back there where the dining terrace used to be. That was removed when Stark came in the 90s. Next page. On the front of the facade, we are restoring the Delano signage at the top of the tower. On the ground level, we are enlarging the front doors, which isn't quite noticeable, but when you walk into the doors now, they're about 6'8", which are very short for a building of this grandeur. I think Stark wanted you to enter through a small door and then enter into a larger space, but we would like to make those doors about 9 to 10 feet tall. We're also there's an existing planter there with a ficus hedge in the planter. We're going to take that planter and turn it into a fountain in the front, similar to what Swartberg did at the Vagabond in Miami. And we're also putting back the similar paint scheme that was there originally in the photos. Next slide. This is some photos of the historic terrazzo that are in the front. We're restoring all of it. You can see it's most of it at the front terrace is in a Harlequin diamond pattern, which we're going to be reusing a similar pattern in the lobby. Next slide. This diagram at the top shows how one in a wheelchair will be entering the front door of the building. Right now, again, there's no access. Raymond Jungles and his office designed a very delicate ramping system with landscaping on both sides. We took the landscaping off in this photo just so you could see how it works. And we're also creating a step right at the front door that with a small 6-inch ramp, so no handrails are going to be needed. Next slide.
Mr. Chair, we'll need about another 6 or 7 minutes, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
On the north facade, we're replacing all the windows in the historical layout. And there's on the north side, there's a lot of service areas. There's ACs hanging off the wall. There's electrical piping on the outside of the building. We're going to be cleaning all that up. Everything will be brand new. Next slide. On the south, same scope of work, but we're also adding a staircase from the lower roof to the terrace. That's going to provide life safety for that level. Next slide. This is a historic image of the Delano right after it was built. You can see on the rear there was a diagonal. Diagonals are definitely a theme in this building. In the 90s, Stark removed that diagonal wall that you see there with the three windows. And there's only one wall remaining, which is on the far north. We are going to be restoring that wall and turning it into an exterior porch, and as well as creating a dining terrace. Next slide. This is an image of the staircase now. We've all walked down those steps. They were great steps at their time, but they really do take up a lot of space. It's a lot of dead area, and it's also not really easy to walk down those steps. We'll be taking those out. Those were built in the 90s and putting back an activated dining terrace that faces the pool. Next slide. This is an image of the rear now. You can see the diagonal wall is replaced with an exterior trellis. And then Raymond Jungles design landscaping on the rear, which is a lot softer than staring at those steps It also, there's also a ramping system that takes you from the pool deck up to the terrace as well. Next slide. This is another image of all of the work that we are doing on the project. I think we went over that. Next slide. This shows you on the left the dining steps, how they are today, and that kind of chess lawn that's there now, which nobody really used. We were able to create more dining terrace, a trellis area, landscaping, fountains, ramps to the upper level and also to the basement. So it's really activated. There's things to do. You know, what Stark designed in the 90s was great. It's had its time, and we really want to, you know, bring this building back to what it was in 1947. Next slide. This image is of the fourth floor lower roof. Right now, it's just a roof. We're going to be activating that for hotel guests only with a spa pool and a yoga lawn. Next slide. Now I'll get into the interiors. Again, you can see that diamond pattern shape in the lobby. We are going to, it's the same size and scale as the terrazzo pattern on the terrace, but it's just slightly different. So the it's a simpler pattern, and it's a different color, but matches the one on the outside because we want to know what was original and what was new. So so we are creating the same size and scale of what was there originally. That dark gray box that you see on the north side, since we submitted the packages to you, we've been working with FPNL. And originally they had said we could keep the existing FPNL vault, but now since the amount of work has increased, they're requiring us to bring that FPNL vault up to flood. I mean, we are planning for the future, so it needs to happen. And I think we found a great spot. They've agreed to it. And it doesn't take up any sort of public interior space. The north side of the building is already activated with kind of mechanical uses and trash and garbage on that side, and that's where we've been able to place the vault. Next slide. Those areas in pink that you see are the areas that we are rebuilding back. On the top was the diagonal porch area, and that was again removed. It's open to the sky above right now. We are going to be placing a roof on that and enclosing it so it has the same, very similar rear elevation that it did originally. And on the bottom is the mezzanine. Portions of that mezzanine are there. They're used for mechanical. We are going to be reactivating some of that mezzanine and putting the bridge back. So there is a main lobby space and then a more casual dining bar lobby space behind it. Next slide. These are some images of the historic lobby and public areas. Very interesting photos. I haven't seen a historic lobby much like this one. You can see the octagonal columns. We are putting those back. Some of them are still there, but not all of them. And we are going to be putting those back. And you can see on the floor, if you look closely, there's a lot of diagonal carpet patterns. That's where we got our inspiration from in the lobby for the terrazzo. Next slide. These are some very early renderings of the lobby. Again, these are still being worked on, but this is what you can see is the octagonal columns being brought back, the column capitals, and you can see the original column on the top left. There's also murals that you can see in the center picture. We're going to be bringing back a mural, and you can see there the terrazzo, the diamond-shaped terrazzo at the bottom. Next slide. Another view of the lobby facing the front door. You can see those doors were raised one panel up, and then we've also activated the lobby with a cafe. Now Raymond is going to be explaining and the landscape design.
Thank you. We're running short on time. How much additional time should we allow for your presentation?
I'll be very quick. Next slide, please. Good morning, everybody. I think you've already seen a lot of the solutions. What I just wanted to talk about, next slide, please, is that this hotel is a gem. It's in Miami Beach, Florida, which is a special place in its own right. It shouldn't look like it's somewhere else. Palm Beach Hedge, you know, a whitewashed building. It was beautiful for its time. I think we all enjoyed it. But after working with the design team of Jennifer and Sam Sherry and ownership, we decided to bring back native vegetation and more views to the building and bring trees into the scene. There's no trees there right now. Everything's just palms and sterile plants. Next slide, please. So the front will be garden focused. Next slide, you've seen it. And in the rear, there'll be a water garden. There'll be, the whole garden will be water focused, so when you're dining out, you won't need railings. It'll be beautiful. You can float down to the lower garden where there's a big green space, and you can enjoy the aquatic plants and the reflections of the sky. And we also have an ADA ramp that makes it very easy for anybody to get up and down to the dining terrace. Next slide, please. And it'll be beautiful. It'll be a little bit of a respite in the city. You bring nature back into the city. And that's our goal with everything we've done here, the same kind of solutions we've done on all the projects we've worked on here. And we're very excited and proud to be involved in this project. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, just a few brief remarks from Mr. Goldstein, who came here from England.
Please, welcome.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for the honour of listening to us, and thank you for the honour of giving me the opportunity to address you. As Neeson said, I'm the chief executive and co-founder of Kane International. When we set up the business, when we looked into North America, Miami was the centre of where we started. We believed that the market and the world did not appreciate the great value in Miami and Miami Beach, and that resulted in an investment in the SBE group initially, which is what ultimately resulted in our ownership of the hotel. But also on the mainland, we are the co-investors in the 830 Brickell project, in the Missoni Bayer, in Una. We own the Jesuit site in Edgewater. We've now expanded into Fort Lauderdale. We're long and deep investors now into this area, and we fully, fully believe in the growth and the Miami Beach area. And we're very proud to be associated with this amazing asset, which we're now hoping to be able to restore back to its original beauty and majesty. Almost 30 years ago, myself, rather younger, and my wife visited the Delano Hotel. I never believed that 30 years later I would have be standing in front of you seeking your approval for us to be able to restore this amazing asset in line with local principles, local values, and to ensure that we can all enjoy the wonderful assets that have been created. I hope we're able to get your approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. I do have two minor comments to the staff conditions, which, if you would like, I can address after public comment.
Debbie, that sound okay?
Yeah, that's okay. Fine with me.
Thank you, Neeson.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before we open up public comment, do any of the board members have any disclosures on this application?
Yes, I met with the applicants on Zoom briefly.
I did as well.
I was contacted by Mr. Scherer on behalf of the applicant. Unfortunately, did not have the opportunity to connect with him.
I was contacted as well as emailed various people, and I did not meet with anybody, and I can look at this in an unbiased manner.
Okay. If that is all, we can open it up to the public.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Ken Harrison Robbins. My offices are at 242 Northeast 27th Street in Miami, Florida. My assistant is passing around comments that we provided to the applicant, as well as this set was also sent to you yesterday, so you have an opportunity to review our objections to the project. They're very... So rather than spending a lot of time going to the details of the objections I provided in writing, again, I'm providing another copy into the record.
I represent the Sagamore and the Ritz, which are right down the block. The Sagamore is 100 feet away. The Ritz, also known as Delito, is about 175 feet away. The formal names are identified in the letter. I don't need to go into those details and spend time on that. We are also submitting a copy of this letter into the record. That letter raises issues related to the project not complying with the regulations of the zoning district, not complying with the certificate of appropriateness requirements, and also not complying with the variance laws. To save the time before this board, we laid out all the numerous conditions existing and proposed which do not comply with the zoning code and other non-compliant code issues which are related to the application. We stand by those objections. I note that the original request for 10 variances were withdrawn, but the non-conforming zoning violations requiring variances remain in the plans. In addition to the other issues raised in the letter, the plan fails to show the location of 6 loading spaces, which acknowledged to be required, which would also impact my clients adversely should they not be there. My client has their facilities down the block, and they're concerned about the traffic and the impact of traffic. And without adequate loading spaces to take care of these matters, there could be a problem for their properties, and they have a direct concern for that. We also raise issues concerning the increase of a 331-person occupancy on the fourth level that was never there before. There's no indication of a requirement to go to a CUP, nor there is there any evaluation of traffic in the file. Usual and customary when a project has substantial changes that affect the uses or modify the uses or change uses in different locations, it's usually required to be documented into the file and a matter of public record. None of that is in the public records of this file. If it was done, we're not aware of it. But it should be done, and especially because there's this
Mr. Harrison Robbins, do you need additional time?
Excuse me?
Do you need additional time
for your... I need one more minute.
One more minute?
We would appreciate looking into that. We have not had an opportunity to see anything to show that the addition of those 331 occupants on the fourth floor would usually trigger a CUP under most circumstances. So I don't know if they're shuffling people around in the building or claiming they are. It's questionable. It seems like there's a substantial increase in occupancy use. So this is exactly the type of thing that should go to the CUP, but it isn't properly documented in the file, so it needs to be done. Those are concerns, the real actual concerns that my client has. My clients are trying to comply with the law. They are agreeing, in fact, to a 11 o'clock closing time when they finish their operations. They're concerned about the noise and the impact that could happen to them. They're upscaling their buildings. We want to make certain that the neighborhood has decent standards and that the zoning code is complied with so we have continuity of regulations and control. All these issues are real.
Thank you
very much. Thank you for your attention, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your comments, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I don't see anyone on Zoom, but I think we have more in person wishing to comment.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Tucker Gibbs. I have offices at 3835 Utopia Court in Coconut Grove, and today I'm here representing the National Hotel in Delphine Dre, its owner, who's here with me, and National Hotels at 1677 Collins Avenue, which is right next door to the Delano. My client supports this application. It's a project that elegantly seeks to restore historic elements while introducing carefully crafted modern touches. This approach enhances the historic qualities of the building as well as the experience of the hotel guests. And like any good neighbor, the Delano proposes a plan that is sensitive to its adjacent properties, neighbors, as well as the surrounding historic district. And that's why we urge you to approve this application for the certificate of appropriateness. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm sorry I came in and I did not say hello to everyone. So I just wanted to say hello. And thank you for your talent to keep Miami Beach what it is. This is amazing, and I wanted really to thank the team of Mr. Goldstein to present us such an amazing renovation. Miami is going to be so... That's really... I'm just very emotional because I'm very surprised of what Mr. Robbins came to say, because the only people that are really going to be impacted by those renovations is the National Hotel. But we are so thrilled and so happy to have this historical building that is going to be renovated in such an amazing way that we are approving the project, and thanking you to approve it as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Excuse me. Daniel Serraldo with Miami Design Preservation League. Our advocacy committee met with the representatives on the site, or actually at the National Hotel. And thank you, Delphine, for letting us use the space. And we also walked through the Delano. It's interesting, like, thinking of the Philip Stark renovation, like, when I was growing up, that was such a cool moment in Miami Beach, and we would take all our friends there to see what they did with these hotels, and everything was white, and it was so trendy. And now it's great to see this new life for the Delano, which still will maintain its historic integrity, but also be certain of the things that were done in the Sark time will be kind of refreshed and brought back to the original. So we were very happy with those aspects of the project. And also it's great to see a historic property being renovated without a large tower, which we're seeing more and more of around town. So we do commend the applicants for their efforts, and we look forward to the Delano being restored and reopened soon and being back available for all of our enjoyment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public? Zoom?
I see no one on Zoom.
Okay. Should we open it to the board? Oh, we do have one more. Welcome.
This is Sandor Schur from Clara Development, here to speak on behalf of the Shelbourne Hotel, which has met with the applicant prior to today, reviewed their information, and is in great support of this very, very tasteful renovation. So I wanted to tell you that another proximate and close neighbor feels very strongly that this is something that should be approved and move forward. So hope you could do that. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for your comment. If there is no further public comment, we'll open it to the board for questions or comments.
Would the applicant like to make rebuttal or no?
No.
Okay.
I don't feel there's any need for rebuttal. I think it's clear. But what I would like to do is there are a couple of conditions I would address. If you'd like me to address them now, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
Sure. Let's do it.
Number one, and one of the a comment that was made in the Miami Design Preservation League endorsement was about the sprinklers that are on the front porch and wanting to have some solution to obscure them. And we would be willing to include in a condition that we will work to have a with staff on a way to cover them or disclose or make them less obvious, and so we'd be willing to do that. The exact solution I don't know at this moment, but ownership certainly agrees they're unsightly, and they would like to make that a better condition. More specifically to the staff conditions, condition 1C, 1B, which reads, all exterior windows and doors shall have clear anodized aluminum frames, except for the three center ground level openings at the porch, which may be permitted to be impact wood or aluminum in a dark brown color. We would say if you look at, and if we need to, we could put the image back up, it is not only the three doors and windows at the opening. There's another set on the porch as well. So we would like them all to be able to be of the same dark wood color, so that we would eliminate the just the words three center ground level openings and allow all the ground level openings at the front porch to be the same color. That's one request. The second condition, sub D, states further investigation shall occur relative to the existence of any original terrazzo flooring underneath the existing wood floors within the lobby. If original terrazzo flooring exists, it shall be retained and restored. If the condition of the terrazzo, as just said, is beyond repair as determined by staff, a new terrazzo floor may be introduced in a pattern and color similar to match the original. Or if no terrazzo flooring is present, the terrazzo floor design as proposed may be introduced in a manner to be reviewed and approved by staff. We would like to delete the words that say a new terrazzo floor may be introduced in a pattern and color to match the original. And we would like it to stay that if no terrazzo flooring is present, or if the condition is such that we can work with staff that it's beyond repair, that we will not have to retain or any terrazzo that's there. Now, let me say this. The historic research that we have done, and you have seen the images, have indicated that there was never any terrazzo there. As you saw, two different pictures of the hotel in its early years with two different carpeting patterns. And then, of course, when it was redone in the mid-90s, the wood flooring was put over there. So what we have tried to do is create a new terrazzo pattern, which we think relates to the front porch. But if in the event there is some portion of terrazzo that exists somewhere, we do not want to be beholden to that. So that's why we request taking out just that phrase, a new terrazzo floor may be introduced in a pattern and color to match the original, so that we can introduce what we have shown you or something, a variation of it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kasdan.
That's it for me.
Okay. Debbie, at this point, should we move on to the board comment?
Yes. I think that's a good idea. And I'm happy to address any questions you may have, given the modifications that Mr. Kasdan just explained to you that he is requesting.
Okay, maybe would you should we hear from you first in response to
those? I'm happy to respond. So in terms of our thinking, because I really didn't describe it in our initial presentation, with regard to the openings on the front facade, what we are recommending is that the original openings, the three at the center of the building, that we believe were originally wood material, be retained in that same color, whether it's wood or a dark metal, similar to what the SLS has. I believe theirs is a metal when they restored their front. And that the new enlarged openings, which were originally windows, maintain the window finish of the remaining windows on the building. To differentiate the new openings as not being part of that original entry, which was in what we believe is a wood material. You know, there's probably arguments on both sides. By enlarging those openings, does it make more sense to match the original doors? Staff, just felt that it would be more consistent with some of the criteria which require modifications to be seen as modern interventions and not part of the original. So I will leave that open to the board. Staff is more than happy to work with the applicant on, the material and the finish for whichever the board decides. With regard to the terrazzo, this is a difficult one. We assume that there was original terrazzo, given the terrazzo that's located on the porch. Typically, when you have a decorative terrazzo porch, the lobby also had that. Now, it is likely that it was covered by carpet most of its original life. There's, you know, we don't really have any evidence that there is for sure terrazzo underneath that wood floor or that there's not. But it's likely that there was originally, and probably what we find is very common is that when new floors were introduced over time, they didn't rip up the terrazzo. They usually just laid a new floor on top. So we're very pleased that the applicant is proposing a new terrazzo floor. We would just like the opportunity to see it, what potentially could be still existing.
My concern is, and I wouldn't be surprised as well if there's a terrazzo floor, but it's condition. And, you know, there was the intent here seems to be, you know, as close, you know, a very fine, detailed restoration and renovation. So I wouldn't want to tie their hands. If there's a floor in perfect condition and it matches the porch, I think that would be a wonderful thing to restore. But if it's got big potholes in it and such, that is not going to match. I would prefer something that relates to but is new of its time. But what is staff's objective? That's not what I'm understanding.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. I mean, I think that's the difficulty here. You're right, Mr. Klein. When Philip Stark did the renovations, I'm sure they added new plumbing. There's new bars in there. They probably, you know, best case scenario, have trenched through that floor with plumbing and other, you know, type of mechanical connections. So you're right. We don't know what's there. I think that's where our hesitation was. If there's a possibility that we have something very spectacular, we didn't want to close the door to potentially requiring them to reconstruct that. But I understand your perspective. I think what they're proposing is perfectly appropriate. It's just the kind of variable is what's there now, and is that worth either restoring? And I believe the applicant has agreed if it's in reasonable, good condition, they will restore it. But I think the disconnect is it going to be something that we're going to want reconstructed, and it's, you know, close to the original pattern as possible, if we can even find it. So the board's in a difficult position. I do think it's a beautiful project, and their new floor is consistent with the character of the period.
With regard to the doors, another perspective would be for consistency on the interior to have, you know, all the doors on that wall be the same. So I'm sympathetic to that perspective too. And with regard to the terrazzo, I mean, personally, I'm happy to defer to staff, to after we discover what's underneath there. It sounds like there's already been some exploratory demolition to uncover that. As Jen mentioned, there were octagonal columns in place inside the round ones and others that were missing. So there's already been some exploration. I'm sure it's not going to take much to uncover mm-hmm. what's under the, what the condition of the floors are like.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Sure.
But we would, I think Mr. Klein's thoughts are consistent with ours. If it is not in good condition, we'd like the ability to move forward with the floor that we proposed or something similar to that.
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
It is highly unlikely, even if it was there, given, as Debbie has mentioned, highly unlikely given the years of carpeting, wood, plumbing, et cetera, that it is in any condition to restore. So we'd like to deal with staff on that rather than be compelled to recreate what remnants are there, if they are there.
Exactly. I think that's reasonable, too. Anybody else from the board?
I have a couple of questions and comments. First of all, with regard to the flooring,
You know, there's also the consideration if there's like a remarkable feature. I don't know if there might be like a centerpiece or a medallion. If there were something like that, I certainly would want staff to have the discretion to retain that or to ask that it be reconstructed. I had the same similar question. And first of all, I want to say amazing team, amazing project. Really a wonderful read. It was really, I'm excited about it. Just generally will say that the Philippe Starck, I was a New Yorker at the time, but happened to have the opportunity to come to Miami when the Delano reopened. And I will say that, you know, I do feel like what was done with the Delano and the time and its place in Miami's history or Miami Beach's history is historical in its own right. Of course, you know, it's served its time, and I think this is an amazing step forward. I just want to say that, and I wouldn't have asked for a better team to be working on this project. You all have done an amazing job. My other question had to do with the materiality of the columns, because it keeps being stated that the columns will be rebuilt. In the historical photos, they appear to have sort of like a reddish color. I'm not sure if that's marble. I'm not sure if any of the existing materiality remains underneath the columns. And I might have the same consideration in mind with regard to the terrazzo, if the materiality of that, I don't know what it is. I can't tell from the photos if it's painted, if it's a faux texture, if it's marble. I just can't tell.
I think it was concrete. When you go there now, they're painted. There's four octagonal columns that are left in the front. It's just painted concrete. If you look closely, it was probably just painted a brown, and they were formed with wood. So it kind of has a wood texture, but I don't think they were wood.
Okay. I mean, again, my feeling on that, because you don't know until you are going to remove the circular features on the column, and if there is, if it tells a story, an authentic story as to the materiality, I think the columns are significant.
Mr. Pascal, if I may,
mm-hmm, please
comment to that. It's interesting because if you go back to the approval in 1992 or 3 or 4, whenever it was, of the redo of the hotel, one of the big issues was the octagonal columns. And one of the conditions of the order back then, 20-some-odd years ago, was that the four octagonal columns in the front of the property had to remain so that there would be some reference to what the original lobby columns were like. So I think what you're looking at in the front is what was original.
Okay. I mean, again, my ask would not want to hold up this project. I'm 1,000% supportive of it, but I would like to give staff discretion as to the materiality if there is discovery when the round features are removed and it's of substantial, you know, if it's concrete, it's concrete. If it's marble or something else, it seems like it's worth staff being aware of it and having the discretion on whether it's significant to retain. Those are my comments. Great project. Thank you. Thank you for what you're proposing and what you're doing.
Okay. Also, I think this is a great project. I think you have a great team. I think very sensitive eyes have looked at this. And I appreciate very much a note I wrote to myself was that it was a respectful approach while maintaining scale and character, and something that I really appreciate because it's not what we – that's not a lot of what we see. And so I do, you know, honestly appreciate that. I won't say what I wrote also. The one thing I find very interesting is the approach to the ramps, that they're integrated into the design and they're not these plopped on, add on elements that are so often what we all use. And I really appreciate that, and that goes, you know, hand in hand with the team. I raised my issue with the floor, and I'm not sure how to resolve that, because if there is some perfect floor in there, or some floor where a little bit of the perimeter is messed up, but the rest is, you know, able to be restored, I would tend to lean in that direction. So I don't know what the right approach is to give staff their leeway to have that discussion without you having to come back here and all of that. I would like to hear the two issues that were brought up about loading spaces and this additional 331 people onto the site, how that's accommodated. I also have no issue at all bringing back those mezzanines and those original spaces. Again, and I can go either way on those doors in the front, but I think this is a great project. I appreciate it. It's great, and it's keeping with the neighborhood. It's keeping with the character, and I think it's what the purpose of this board is here to protect. You've come and done that.
If I may just respond briefly, two things, and I'll deal with the occupancy issue. The occupancy issue is one that if there is a change in occupancy, it will be dealt with through a CUP at the planning board. But I will tell you, there is no proposal to increase the overall occupancy of the property.
And just to further that, this we will be reviewing their occupancy, their seat count, which areas are open to the public, which areas are for hotel guests only during the building permit review process. If they trigger a requirement for a conditional use permit through the planning board due to their occupancy, they will be heard at the planning board. But that's not in the purview of this board, but that is definitely part of the review during the permitting. The loading spaces, again, because they're not intensifying at this point, at least we don't believe this is an intensification of use, there's no new hotel units, right? They're all existing. And there's no change of use. Right now you have a hotel with accessory restaurant and alcoholic beverage establishment. Because there's no change of use that we've identified, there's no requirement for loading. If they go through a conditional use process, the planning board would be reviewing circulation, loading, and their operational plan as part of that review. But at this point, from Steph's perspective, it does not appear that loading spaces or a waiver from the loading requirements is required. Sure.
It's on the wrong side. I always sit this way. I have to say that this was a pleasure to listen to and to have read. I enjoyed reading everything that was given to us, even though they were big, heavy books. This one wasn't that bad. But the thing that I admire about, well, first of all, I love the people. Jennifer, you always.
Thank you, Nancy.
Do it well. And, of course, Neeson, yes, thank you. Thank you.
No. We go back a ways.
So the thing that I admire the most about this, I can't find anything I didn't like. And I love the fact that the building is going to be what the building was. There's nothing pasted onto it, no tall heights added to it, no decorations. It was what it is what we got. And it was perfect then, and it's perfect now, and I look forward to it.
Thank you, Nancy. Laura?
I could not agree more. The details are just fantastic, and I think providing ADA accessibility in such a thoughtful way is really difficult, and with the landscaping and architect team, you guys did a fantastic job. Totally echoing, you know, thank you for Jennifer and your team, especially always taking such care of these Miami Beach gems. And I think restoring the signage, and there was mention of a plaque, which I love plaques. So I actually do read them, and my friends do too. So I think that's a fantastic detail. In regards to the entrance and, you know, really bringing it back, I do think Art Deco was all about the entrance and that kind of that sense of arrival and awe. So I agree to opening it up and understand that logic. When Mr. Jungles was talking about floating down to the lower garden, I really, you know, appreciated that. And of course, those Stark steps are iconic, but you know, I see the reasoning and logic again behind it. Overall, I just really want to thank really ownership for demonstrating that preservation, historic preservation, is actually forward thinking, and it's the most forward thinking type of development, in my opinion, by honoring the past and not trying to erase what makes Miami Beach such a special place. And just really appreciate again the team that you guys put together. The only question I really had, if we go to the staff conditions, was really just F and G regarding the required setbacks, and that was also brought up by one of the, you know, neighbors in the property, nearby the property, just because I wasn't understanding that fully. But thank you so much.
Ms. Weinstein-Berman, I would be happy to answer that. So with regard to condition F, and this is something that we discussed with the applicant at length at the beginning of the process. In the Philip Stark renovation, we did identify permitted work in the oceanfront overlay, some of which is non-conforming to today's standards. However, we were unable to find permits for what appears to have occurred in the dune preservation overlay. We did extensive research, and I know the applicant did as well, in terms of finding, you know, when this was permitted. Probably it was done sometime in the 90s. Because we were unable to find any valid permits for that work, the applicant has agreed as a condition in this order to revise that plan to comply with all requirements of the dune preservation overlay. We are fine with them allowing to maintain some of the nonconformity of the oceanfront overlay because we have valid permits that are very clear as to that work that was done. But we are asking that the dune preservation overlay comply with 100% of the current requirements, and they have agreed to do that. And G is, it's something that it was very difficult to understand exactly if those were cabanas or pieces of furniture. They are allowed to have lounge chairs and traditional furniture. So during the permit review, we will look at that in further detail and require that to meet any setbacks that are required.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I feel very fortunate that my very first project here is a beloved property that obviously means so much to so many people, and that a proposal that seems to have so much support around the community because of how much attention you're giving and concern for restoring historic elements, and also to welcome from afar our new member of the community to develop the property. We're glad to bring lovers of Art Deco and our Art Deco district here. I was glad to hear that the concerns by objectors that there's other places that apparently are they're going to be addressed in the planning process, whether it's the loading setbacks, because I think we've got enough
to focus on with compatibility and design. But any legitimate concerns, I think, need to be addressed so that a project with as much support like this does get to go forward. And my only question and comment, it seems as though the new water features are a big part of what you're, you know, at the entrance, at the back, the aquatic garden. But I didn't see any sort of detailed renderings of what you're proposing, unless it's somewhere there in the packet. And I would think that could be a concern for the board, what exactly it looks like, what these new water features are going to be, because you compared it to the Vagabond in Miami, which has a sculpture, and so I'm using my imagination, and it's y'all's imagination, not mine, as to what exactly going to be there. Is it going to be a sculpture? Is it going to be a fountain? Is it going to be something historic? And I think that could be a defining elements of the project.
Mm-hmm. We do have renderings of the fountain features. In the front, we do have just a placeholder for what will be some sort of statue in the fountain. But we'll be glad to work with staff on the selection of what that will be.
And Mr. Reed, there is a planter in the front on the terrace, and staff has asked that the fountain generally follow the form and outline of that existing planter. So it's not going to be a dramatic feature.
But the comment was comparing it to the Vagabond in Miami, so I thought it might be dramatic.
And that is only to the extent that was also a Bob Swartburg building, mm-hmm. and so he introduced some of those elements. But this is, it's going to be within the confines generally of the existing planter that's there in the front porch.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, what a great team and great project. Thank you to ownership for bringing it forward and putting together this excellent team. I think everybody here seems very excited about it, and I congratulate you. One thing in the presentation that I thought would be important would be to support the continued effort to develop the details for the terrazzo floor before we got into the discussion of what's there, what's underneath, or what's not. Just seeing the kind of preliminary renderings of the pattern and how they relate to the octagonal columns, I imagine that one would want to develop details for those terrazzos to kind of complement the richness of the design that we see in the original, particularly at the porch. But I think overall this looks really good. I did want to ask about this packet. For us to receive a package like this, it's not likely that anybody here has read this at this point, nor will we.
I read it last night.
This? Okay. Because I
ask everyone submitting public comments to submit it no later than 3 business days prior to the hearing, because we understand that the board members are likely not going to be able to read anything lengthy in great detail the night before the hearing or the morning of the hearing. But they are permitted to submit the information, and we pass that to the board members.
Okay. Yes, Nancy.
Is the expectation that we read this and we're supposed to comment?
No. When we notice each application, that language about the public comment should be received 3 business days prior to the hearing is in the notice language.
And we have to submit our presentation.
Members of the public are welcome to comment. They're welcome to address the board and pass out any information they want, but it's reasonable to think if you receive something the morning of or the night before that you haven't been able to evaluate it.
All right, so my question was only, I thought maybe because it started out that it was going to be in March, but today is the day for this. Okay.
Yeah, it just seems, you know, not helpful to receive this with such short notice. We don't have time to read. I haven't read it. And then, you know, the points that were raised, it seems like there was, you know, even those are in question. You know, Mr. Kasdan clarified that there is no additional occupancy here. So I think it's confusing and a little bit of a waste of time to get this sort of thing at these kinds of meetings. Anything else before we proceed to a motion? Would someone like to make a motion?
I'd make a motion. The public is closed. I would make a motion to move the project forward with consideration of I'm still very torn on that lobby floor, and that there would be more there would be some study done on what's there and some collaboration with staff, and that if something can't be worked out with staff, that it comes back here. I would like to know, though. I just want to know whether I'd like it to come back here for information to know that, you know, I don't want to be setting up to restore something that shouldn't be restored. That's my concern. That's my concern with a motion, that staff would want to restore something so bad because it was there, but it really shouldn't be.
Mr. Klein, may I make a suggestion?
Yeah, you can call me Barry. It's okay.
You know, when you're sitting up there, you're Mr. and Mrs. or Ms.
Right, Mr.
I would just suggest that if it is determined by staff that it is in poor condition, that we would be allowed to, allowed to proceed as we have proposed with the new design, working with staff to refine it.
I'm also wondering if we couldn't or shouldn't put in a percentage of poor condition. If there's more than, I'm just concerned that staff wants to restore something that, you know, if they come back and say, well, 90% of it's good, well, 10% looks bad, I'll leave it to staff, to you and staff.
And we feel comfortable we can work it out.
Okay.
So, Mr. Kasdan, it sounds like I think the condition that was that you stated earlier, your modifications to the condition, is more in line with what Mr. Klein is saying than staff's?
Right, that if it's determined to be in poor condition, then we don't have to restore it in a pattern and color to match the original, but all the remaining language of that condition applies, that we'll work with staff.
That if it is in reasonably good condition, it be retained.
Can I add, I'm wondering if we could add, if it's of, at staff's discretion, of a remarkable design. I mean, you know, we don't know what's under there, and if it is of a remarkable design, then we won't want staff to have the discretion, I would think, to ask that it be reintroduced, even if it is damaged.
In a new
The language "remarkable design" is a little tricky, because, you know, what's remarkable to one may not be to another. I understand what you're saying. If there is an intricate pattern, if there is a medallion that has some historical significance.
Can we word that to give staff some discretion on that?
Adding that if there are elements within the floor that have historical reference, relate design-wise, shape or pattern to the form of the building, that those be retained or recreated in a manner that's worked with staff.
Is it, I have a question.
That's more specific. So
yeah,
I'm
not opposed to a
that.
New floor that is of now. So that's the way I would make the motion.
Okay. Can I just add a couple of things? Again, if you look on page 24 of the renderings, to me, these columns don't look like masonry. They have seams. And so, again, if there's a way of building in just a measure of discretion. I know staff would not be unreasonable, but if there were some significant materiality.
So such as stone, yeah, it's difficult to say. It does look like, in, you know, this is, it's a little bit difficult.
Can't we just build in, again, some measure of discretion for staff?
I think so. I think I would like to be a little bit more specific. So if during uncovering the octagonal columns, if there is existing an existing special material such as a natural stone or marble, that be either retained, if in good condition, or reintroduced.
At staff's discretion. Yes? Is that okay?
That would be okay.
Okay. And I think probably the same for what you said, Mr. Reed, about the fountain, right? We'd want that, some measure of discretion for staff.
We do have a condition for the fountain, right, in our recommendations, that the exterior portion of the planter or the fountain, which is within the porch, that follow generally the same geometry as the existing planter, which I believe the applicant has agreed to.
Yes.
And what about the statuary? Is that just anything?
I don't think they said anything about statuary.
They don't have it.
It's just it was compared to a fountain that has statuary, but there's also in the rear there was a fountain and also the aquatic garden. And, well, you know, the staff, of course, we would agree to have staff review the final fountain in front and in the backyard as well.
Thanks, Barry. Sorry for interrupting. No, I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate
that. I mean, on a matter like this, is it possible that the staff will report back to the board about the condition of the floors and we decide what to do? Then you set it for a particular period of time by the next meeting or by a meeting of a certain date, that it'll be determined if the floors require preservation or not.
I mean, that's another alternative to the proposed condition.
Yeah, I was trying to do it without them having to come back.
Which we would appreciate not having to come back. I think the direction from the board is clear.
You know, on that condition for the flooring, if we were to, rather than add language, but if we were simply to strike the last four words to match the original, I think that it satisfies what you're looking for. Right?
If
the condition of the terrazzo is such that it's beyond repairs, as determined by staff, a new terrazzo floor may be introduced in a pattern and color.
Yeah.
The problem is we don't know what the design is. That's the thing. If it's just a pattern, it's just
it
a pattern.
As determined by staff, so it leaves it open.
Fine.
To
staff. As determined by staff.
I would be comfortable. That would simplify everything, and I would be comfortable with that. Clearly, if there is something that staff is not comfortable with, we would bring that back to you.
Okay. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Good to me.
But I think the condition leaves it clear. We're going to do some investigative work over the next probably couple months, and if we are not comfortable with something, We will bring it back to you. Otherwise, we're more than happy to work with the applicant on the final details of that feature.
That it?
Yeah, that's my motion.
Second.
Okay, so that is with the condition that we just read about the floor. Did we add the condition regarding the columns?
Correct.
Okay, and what about the remaining question was with the condition regarding the exterior windows and doors on the front facade, that the in terms of the frame finish and color, whether the new openings should remain.
I would say that the doors on that ground at the entrance should all be the same.
Okay. So
we agree
with that.
Okay. We will modify that condition consistent with that direction. Okay, so we have a motion.
And a second.
And we have a second. Let me call the roll. Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Pascal?
Yes.
And Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. We do have one more application, so if you have a conversation, please take it outside of commission chambers. Okay. All right, our next application, if people in the audience could quiet down or take your conversations outside, we would greatly appreciate it so we can move on with our next application. We have another application, so if you have a conversation, you can please take that outside of the chambers.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have to continue the meeting here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next application is HPB 210491. This is 1801 Collins Avenue. An application has been filed requesting a certificate of appropriateness of an electrical vault room within the rear yard of the site and variances from the required setbacks. So I think in the staff report, we outlined the history of this particular property. In April of last year, the board did review and approve some modifications to the public interior, as well as the partial restoration of the original lapidus design folded wall on the south side. Would note that the applicant is eager to begin construction on this project. They have submitted for a building permit and are moving as quickly as possible toward the renovation of the building. During that process, a very serious issue came up with Florida Power and Light regarding their existing vault. We briefly touched on that with the previous application, the Delano. Staff has found increasingly that the FPNL requirements are more and more burdensome on particular property owners, especially historic properties, right? Because, you know, FPNL needs a certain level of access. So to place a vault room in an existing building becomes very challenging in terms of the amount that has to be demolished and how the access is gained. In this particular case, we did explore many options with the applicant. Given the existing historic building and the site configuration, we do believe the most appropriate location is where it is currently proposed, which is along the south side on 18th Street. This, however, does require variances from that south side setback. It requires a variance from the required side yard setback as well as the required side yard setback in the oceanfront overlay. So there are two setback variances that are being requested, both for the same thing, the south side setback, but one portion of the building is within the oceanfront overlay, which is a different section of the code, which requires the second variance. We do find that there is significant practical difficulty here. They could be allowed, if this board were to approve, to demolish a portion of the existing building and kind of fit it in there and allow FPNL access. That is not something that staff believes would be appropriate or satisfy the certificate of appropriateness criteria. We also understand that FPNL has advised the applicant that they will not receive any power to the building unless this very large sized vault is added to the property. We do believe that that is a significant hardship, not being able to electrify the property, and are supportive of the setback variances. We would also note that although these structures are not ideal in historic districts, being on the side street, and the fact that the applicant has put design thought into it, creating kind of a designed facade, which is difficult to do with the requirements of the ventilation, of the access doors. So we generally think that this will not have any adverse impact on the historic building. We do not believe it will have any significant adverse impact on the pedestrian character of 18th Street and are recommending approval. And that is all I have. I see Mr. Larkin is here.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Board Member, Staff. Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Here is the applicant. With me today is Mitchell Cohen from Westdale Properties. He's probably going to appear via Zoom. Project managers Grace Dillon, Sandor Scherer from Claro Corp. Ray Fernandez, our architect. Matthew Lewis, our landscape architect. And my colleague, Nicholas Rodriguez. Debbie covered most of the important points. You know, we did appear before you all in the spring of last year. We did a major renovation. If you can believe it, at some point in the 90s, townhomes were permitted to be built within the lobby. So we're removing the townhomes, we're restoring the double height space of the lobby. And during the permitting process, as you all, FP&L is a monopoly, you know, the bully in town, and they don't yield to anything. So right now, our FPL vault is located in the basement. It cannot be repaired. It cannot be renovated. If a hurricane were to come and remain in the basement, we'd be out of luck. If you all remember the front of the Shelburne, that's typically the other place they would go. But there's no room within the front of the Shelburne without substantial demolition of that front elevation where you could put an FP&L vault. So where we've been pushed to put it is really the only place within the property where it does fit. And with regard to the variance, yes, there are two variances required, but the code gives you two different standards. One is a hardship standard, one is the practical difficulty standard. We do satisfy the practical difficulty standard based upon the lack of any other place within the hotel to place it and FPL's technical requirements. So with that, I'm just going to turn over to Ray, and he's going to walk you all through the presentation once it's pulled up by PJ.
Ray Fernandez with offices in Coconut Grove. We'll pull up the presentation real quick. Next slide, please. Again, just for the benefit of everyone, that's the location indicated there, highlighted. Next slide. The area in question is towards the rears of the property. Again, this is the east side of the property. Next slide. You see here the street views, the number two there that is circled, number two, that's approximately where the vault is going to be located. As you can see, there's a garden wall that extends from Collins towards the east side of the property. Next slide. Just a general, as commented before, the existing vault is in the basement area. There is a alleyway that provides access to that area. Unfortunately, FP&L is somewhat reluctant. They say if something happens, they cannot pull their equipment out or put new equipment in. We obviously studied numerous options with them for an extensive amount of time. Consideration was given to doing something on the south facade. We said, no way, we're not going to destroy the historic character of that. Putting it on Collins was obviously another problem because it would impact that. So we nearly worked ourselves all the way back to where we are. And interestingly enough, you will see in the design how we're trying to integrate that into the cabana areas that are being proposed for the east side of the site. Next slide. Here you see just a, you know, the alleyway area and the vault door. Next slide, looking the other way. Again, very narrow passageway, so we obviously recognize that there are issues for them. Next slide. Here you have now just the general floor plan showing you what would be done on the east side as well as highlighting where the vault will be located. Next slide. And now an enlargement of that. The dimensions that you see there is what they specifically asked for. We're not giving them one extra inch of space, and they strategically located their doors to coincide with the equipment. You'll notice, too, that the doors swing 180 degrees. The purpose of that is obviously to give them full access, also not to block anyone from using that area should there be occupants or people, pedestrians going in the area. Next slide. Our inspiration, we kind of looked at, obviously, Miami Beach, the general character of things, and we developed what we think is a pretty interesting facade for the building. Next slide. Here you see a 3D image. The doors, the louvers, elements, those are obviously in coordination with FP&L. We then went ahead and integrated let's call it an exterior skin to the building that kind of starts to break up the facade of the building on the street side. On the interior side, it kind of talks more about the character of other features within the landscape development of that area. Next slide. Again, you see that in the elevation, the building towards the end. Next slide. And here you have, obviously, the facade view. Again, the doors, as required by FPNL, where they want them. Those doors will be opening up 180 degrees. We wanted to have more cladding of wood. Obviously, we couldn't do it because it would prevent the doors from swinging as they desire or need it to be done. You can also see that the garden wall kind of extends and begins to add a linear flow from the garden wall into the building, so tying both together. Next slide. On the interior side, it's now all cladded in wood, and the idea here is that it starts to work with the other structures that are in the landscaped area. Next slide. Just run you this again, the one of the east facade and the west facade. Next slide, please. Again, next slide. And obviously the height, again, dictated by FPNL. We are cladding the top of the building, again, in a wood structure, so that it also hides the roof. Will be just the roof element. It's now almost like a complete almost cabana feel to the structure. Next slide. And again, it's just a cross-section so you understand the general scale and size of the building. Next slide, please. And here are the 3D images. Here you're looking due east as walking down 18th Street. Next slide. An image now looking due west. Again, integrating landscaping wherever possible, maintaining existing elements that are in the street. So we strategically located the building to not only satisfy the FPNL, but existing conditions and create as much of a landscaping buffer as possible. Obviously, we cannot put any landscaping in front of the building because they need full access to it. Next slide. Again, just a close-up. Next slide, please. And there you see a closer view again. Next slide. And just a 3D sort of overall look of the building, as you can see the cladding around, the cladding on the top, and how the cladding starts to work with the different elements in coordination with the requirements of FPNL. Next slide, please. Again, do another view. And then let's look at next slide. So as far as the landscaping, again, the idea here is to, we're expanding the visual or extending the view from the pool area. We've introduced the lawn and then expanding that view all the way out. Next slide. You can see there an enlarged area of that where that new lawn is being placed. Originally, there's kind of a elements that are blocking your view. The idea is that the site is being extended all the way through and new landscape being introduced. There are pockets where there'll be individual cabanas, very similar in cladding as the one that it's being done to the building. So it's all in character. When one looks at it, it will kind of all work together visually. Next slide. Here you see just an enlargement of that area, the passageways that are around where the cabana is strategically located in relationship to the circle, so they have full access, as well as the other elements within the site itself that have been introduced into the design of that east lawn area. Next slide. Again, just another enlargement of that, showing the different areas of the space. Next slide. And this is what it was, or is currently is, and as you can see, it blocks the site, actually kind of cuts it off, where you see that scallop feature. So now it is going to be extended all the way through. Next slide. And this is just a few of the materials that are being used. And the little one at the bottom is that, you probably don't see as well, but that is an actual little wood cabana. And that new structure, how we're cladding ours, talks a little bit about that and pulls some of those images. Next slide, please. And this, again, is just an indication of the locations and of the space and where elements are located. Next slide. And finishing up with the landscaping. Next slide, please. I'll turn it to you.
That's all we have, Mr. Chairman. Board members, happy to answer any questions you all might have after the public hearing.
Okay, Mr. Chair, before you open the public hearing, do the board members have any disclosures to make?
I did have a brief call with the applicant.
Okay, anyone else?
I received an email from the applicant that I forwarded to the city.
Okay.
I again received a text message from Mr. Scher. Unfortunately, did not have an opportunity to speak with him.
Okay.
Okay. I don't see any members of public on Zoom wishing to speak on this item. Are there any people in the audience? Mr. Gonzalez, welcome.
Good morning. Alfredo Gonzalez for the record on behalf of 333 Greenberg Traurig, on behalf of BSD Raleigh LLC. We're here today in support where the 1775, 1757, and 1751 Collins Avenue, the Raleigh, the Richmond, and South Seas. We're here in support of the application here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. Looks like there's nobody else from the public, so we can go ahead and open it to board comment. Who would like to start us off?
I have a question.
Nancy?
I have two questions. What is the noise content that's surrounding all of this? I know that it was a big stretch to find a place to put whatever you had to do with the machinery. So when you finally got there, mm-hmm. how much of the land did you take up with the change? How much noise is absorbed? Because it seemed to me in one of the photos, it seemed like there was a pool.
Yes, there is a pool. Yes,
right,
absolutely.
It's
about 15 feet away from the structure. But please understand that that structure is a solid masonry structure, so it's going to contain a lot of that noise within it. Noise would not be permeating into the area where the occupants are going to be on the lawn side. Of that area. But
how close are they?
The actual sitting area your pool is probably about 15 feet away. There are obviously sitting area around the pool, and then further east it will have additional cabana spaces. But the actual vault itself, the area that where the noise would be going through, that's going to be all a solid concrete structure that follows FPNL guidelines. So the noise will be contained. Whatever noise that equipment may make, which now is pretty modern equipment, probably be contained within the vault itself.
And if not, if it's not contained and all of a sudden grand opening and you hear all that mess coming towards you?
No, there will be no openings towards the lawn side. The openings are only towards the street side. And so it will definitely, there will be, the sound itself carrying through those walls would not be an issue because the openings are only on the other side. Yeah, there wouldn't be any noise issue that we know.
And what was the comment that you said about you couldn't do something in the front?
Oh, we studied that putting it in the building at one time, but we would be destroying the accordion wall or facade that was previously approved. Because what happens is they want it at grade level, so we would demolish portions of that. So we absolutely said that nowhere could we do that. If we attempted to do that on Collins, we would actually be damaging that facade as well. So because they want things to be at grade to be able to access their equipment to it.
Is this the first time in recent history that you've had a problem like this with other buildings, other people who were coming in? Or is this the first and only time that you've had this kind of problem?
When you say problem regarding coordination with FPNL?
Oh, I know that's not a problem. That's the problem. No. Is it the first?
Well, Nancy, there's often alleys that here you just don't really have an alley on the oceanfront corridor, like an Ocean Drive, Collins, Washington. No matter how large the buildings are, you can access it from the alley, which is what you're supposed to do. But you're left between a rock and a hard place on Collins Avenue because you have the ocean on one side, Collins on the other. And we're on a side street, which is a saving grace for us because now we can put it on the southeastern corner of our property and not damage the historic building. But we don't have as many choices for these utilitarian parts of our infrastructure as we would in other areas of the city.
Sandra Scherer from Clara Development for the Shelbourne. This is a pretty common thing that with all these historic buildings, right? Like, so these buildings were built before FPNL vaults existed. They were built before central air conditioning was the way it's designed now. They were built before, you know, we had to have large fire command rooms and all the life safety things that exist. So it's always a very, very difficult challenge on every project. And every project is its own special snowflake. I mean, they really are. You know, we had the same issue at 1685. We were able to resolve it in a different way. So what I would say is every project deserves its own version of consideration on this. This issue for this property goes back to even in 2014 when we redid this property, which was the first major redo. And FPNL actually was talking about having this place a transformer in the front of the property. There was going to reconfiguration of the handicap ramp. That idea would obviously have more impact on the property than what we're proposing right now. But the other aspect of it is that FPNL came back and said, you can't do that anymore. They're not, we would still need to carve out large portions of the historic lobby for, you know, a room that they can house equipment in. And it's literally the equipment is this box and the room is this big. It's just, you know, they have their own version of what their safety criteria is. So the answer to your question is yes. Every project, these are pretty common issues, and they get resolved in different ways on every project. There's no one size fits all. And this, you know, iteration is obviously the most costly and the most difficult to execute for the owners, but they're willing to do it. You know, you've met with Mitch Cohen, who's one of the owners, and you know how important the heritage aspect of this project is to this ownership group. So this is where we've ended up as a way to preserve what's truly remarkable about the property. So that's a little bit of a history on it.
In all my years of doing things as a community person, we've had to deal with FDOT and the other two who do the same thing. So that's why I had to ask these questions, because they really, you're lucky you have big, strong people behind you, and they bent to do something properly.
Yeah.
They don't do that when it's the little folks who are trying to improve the community. And in many of my years, I'm sorry I didn't make notes of them. I never realized there was a problem like this.
Yeah, no, you're right. And for smaller properties and smaller, you know, hotels, it is a real issue from a preservation perspective that I'm sure, you know, staff faces every day with, you know, with how to deal with these things. It's a real challenge.
Yeah, and we're seeing it's important. It's an important point that Mr. Scherer just made. We're seeing more and more, I don't want to say demands, but requirements from FPNL. And when we first started this conversation, we were also in discussion with the Raleigh developer due to their unforeseen and increased FPNL requirements. So our first idea was to consolidate, because if the Raleigh, which will be coming back before you in the next few months, needed to enhance, then maybe we could incorporate the capacity for the Shelbourne as well. But that's, you know, the requirements are getting so aggressive that that was not even possible. And you are likely to see more and more of these. Staff is concerned. This is not something the applicant asked for. This is not something they wanted to do. But we, you know, we can concur that, yes, this is more and more an issue. And something that while we in the past have tried to have conversations with FPNL, it's a major challenge.
No. Well, you're not alone, I can tell you. One of the issues that really riles me is when I see on a beautiful lawn, all of a sudden, there in front of your face is something that comes from, I guess, one of them, transformers or whatever they have.
Backflow right preventers, water sprinkler lines, gas meters, backflow preventers.
They're all there. Maybe one of these days we should have a little collection and show the world what it's like.
We have these infrastructure, these elements of infrastructure. The city has planted them around these pumps. I think we had one or two of them come here and we debated it pretty heavily. I think that these guys are acting nicer, are bringing something in a more positive approach than I'll say that than the city brought to us on I think 26th or 27th and Collins. Mm-hmm. It's the fact of life, and yeah, we're going to see it. We live in a big world with lots of moving parts, and we need power. We need internet.
It would be nice if there was some special dispensation for historic buildings from the Florida Building Code, from the Florida Fire Prevention Code.
It would be nice,
but it would probably take as the largest historic district in the country, we feel it more than
you know,
else.
The most insidious part of all this is that FPL, since I was an associate, I've heard my clients complain that they require you to supersize your equipment. There's no proportionate, you know, it's not like it just meets your demand. No, they want to put surplus power back into the grid, and it's hard to argue against that, but when it falls such a burden upon the developers and the owners just trying to renovate their buildings, it really becomes an issue, you know?
So, yes, one of these days, maybe it'll get better.
Sandra, I'm going to go to Tallahassee and lobby this, right, Sandra?
I'm so appreciative of the owners of this property, and Sandra, I'm a big fan of everything you've done for our city and in our historic districts. I'm still confused, and I'm very worried. I'm looking at this in the same way, again, we had the generator, you know, that we went over and over and over again, and nobody was really happy, and nobody was going to be. We have the 5G poles, same thing, nobody's happy, nobody's going to be. I'm not understanding the parameters, and I realize that this property has a street front on 18th Street, but many historical properties do not have a street front. I'm not sure that I love that there's a giant box that's going on the street front in between these two amazing, you know, incredible properties for our city. I'm worried, and I don't understand, and I don't know if anyone can help me to understand it. Is there a reason why it has to be on the street? Does FPNL need access on the street? And if that's the case, then what would you have done if you were the next property north and you don't have a street front? Which, you know, in my mind, I'm like, why couldn't it have been connected, you know, at the end of the Cabanas where people aren't going to really see it? I don't understand, and I'm worried about what the precedent this is going to be for what we get in the future. We're going to have these giant boxes that everybody has to look at next to, I mean, a substantial size. I just want to understand it a little better, why this is the only option. And I do understand that we don't want to destroy historical fabric. I'm not questioning that at all. I absolutely agree with staff's assessment. We don't love losing green space either, which we are. You know, my only other question, which is a little one, but has to do with the wood cladding, because in my experience, wood cladding has a life of about 7 years or so in the elements, and I'm wondering what happens when the wood starts looking deteriorated. You know, I realize that this is something the applicant never asked for. I'm feeling as a board member that I don't want to give the applicant a hard time. I wish that it were more... more aesthetically alluring, the design, it's okay. But those are all questions of mine. I don't know if you can help me a little bit, Debbie, to understand.
Sure,
better.
You know, I have some of the same questions and definitely the same concerns. FPNL requires a certain dimension of access. So, you know, one option could have been shifting it to the side where it's located on now, the north side. However, most historic buildings have 5-foot setbacks. That is not sufficient for FPNL. They will not agree to service a vault with a narrow side yard setback. They do want truck access. With landlocked properties, there have been limited occasions where they've slightly reduced their access requirements instead of, I don't know what they want, 12 feet down to 7 feet or 8 feet. The other option that we've explored, which is also not, in my opinion, a good option, is access from the beach walk. Access from the beach walk would FPNL would require that the city give a perpetual easement for truck access over that beach walk. That is not something that the city is comfortable doing for various reasons. And so that has not turned out to be a viable option. New construction, when we have projects with new constructions, it's easier to accommodate. We do require, when we have new construction, for these service areas to be within the envelope of the building, and it can be designed in how the FPNL can access the site. With existing buildings that are not proposing new square footage, which is the case in this particular property, it is just something that we, in the past, I would say 6 months to a year, have seen more and more stringent requirements. More size, as the applicant had expressed. I think this is 40 feet by
15.
By 15 feet and a certain height. It seems excessive. And a couple years ago, we did have a couple conversations with FPNL. But that has been challenging. That has not been an open dialogue. With staff, and we do look at these on a case-by-case basis. You know, there's probably a half a dozen more that I'm currently talking with property owners about how we can accomplish this. There are probably going to be more applications to this board. We just talked about the Delano. They at the last minute, Jennifer was able to find a location where they have the existing service, but that also was on a street-facing elevation. So it's very challenging. And the frustrating part is all of these properties are very close to each other, right? You've got the Raleigh, the Shelbourne, and the Delano very close. You know, ideally, we could consolidate some of this capacity into a property that does have new construction. But so far, we have not been successful in those
I'd
efforts.
I'd like to suggest something that I'm sure people have thought about, but it just dawned on me. What would happen if we took some of the, I don't know, what kind of members of P&L. I've never seen them. I don't know where they are, but I thought if we could get a couple of them and take them on a tour of our city and show them what they are doing to our city. They always make you come to them. You have a problem, you have to go to them. It's all the way out where the cattle ranches are. So, you know, do that very much. I think, am I talking about the right one? Because there's the other one.
You are.
My
dad worked for Florida Power and Light for 40 years, and he's an electrical engineer. And I'll tell you what, a site visit would make no difference to him. He looks things at black and white. There is no gray. There's no aesthetic quality to anything. You see what he did to our garage addition. I was like, oh, my God. He designed it. I'm like, Dad, how could you? But, you know, so they don't really much care. Debbie was right. Debbie's being more kind than I am, but they just don't care.
I know that they don't much care. But I feel like they are part of our city, our state, our country. How dare them to think that they, and they do, they think they're the only ones in town. I'd like to see that happen. I think if we got the mayor, maybe he'd like to go do that.
Yeah.
I would like to do that too.
All right.
Look, I think the last thing I would say is that the reason why you're seeing so much of this now is because we're at this crossroads where these properties are now finally, you know, they were built at a certain period of time. Like if you zoom out to 30,000 feet and look at when they were built and the renovations that have taken place, you're at this crossroads where now you have these major interventions happening and major upgrades happening. And so that's really what's driving it. You know, believe me, from an ownership perspective, we spent a long time saying, well, what's the risk if we just don't do it? Yeah, we can keep operating this way. And you know, unfortunately, you know, when you look at the risk of it, the concept of being, when FP&L says, well, you'd be done and we can't do anything to get you power and you're going to have to do exactly what you're doing right now, except you're going to be trying to do it as quickly as possible while your hotel's not able to operate and have electricity. So it's just, you know, but that's what it is. Where when you say, why is this happening now? We're just in the grand scheme of where we are and the life cycle of these hotels, this just happens to be hitting right now with what's happening.
So with that in mind, are we building into our criteria with new applications? I mean, is that something that's always being considered so we won't be getting these?
Absolutely. Back? And we require that on all applications for the plans to show where their FP&L equipment is going. Unfortunately, sometimes FP&L changes their mind through the permitting process. I say that because we take an extremely detailed review of preliminary plans working with the applicant. We do advise the applicant to discuss preliminary plans with FP&L before finalizing anything that goes to this board. What I have found is that FP&L will agree to something during the preliminary review process, and when it comes to permitting, they change their mind. I get upset when we deal with that because we take so much time at the city level looking at these issues, and to come back before you after the fact, you know, after you've approved something is, you know, frankly, a waste of time on the front end that we try so hard to get correct. So we will continue to work. We will continue to try and have an open dialogue with FP&L. It's not a pleasant thing. What I think and what I would commend the current applicant for is really taking the aesthetics of it seriously and really trying to design something that is the least intrusive as possible. And I agree with the board members' comments that I think this is thoughtful. And for what it is, successful.
Are there other board members that wanted to comment on this?
Well, I was glad when Kirk mentioned the wood. And I understand that the idea is that it'll repeat what's
in your landscaping plan, the cabanas, right. And, right. And I guess the walkways. But this is on the outside of the building, and if I guess you want to do it on the inside of the building, that's fine. But on the outside, it doesn't really look like it fits in the land. It just doesn't look. The criteria for the certificate of appropriateness, we're supposed to mainly look at compatibility, architectural features, texture, material, and color. To me, it looks at a place. I mean, it looks nice, but it isn't a historic district, and I think that we're trying to aim for a high standard of design in a historic district. Something that this weekend I had to take my daughter to the Frost Science Museum, and while I was waiting for her, I went biking around downtown, and you know, there's a new walkway along the Miami River that curves around this building where the river opens to the bay, and there's public art along that wall. Mm. A lot of public art. This is a beach access. I would be happy to see something that was kind of playful and beachy. It's a public space. It's a public beach end. It's your property, so I'm not the expert on aesthetics, but I think that this is a street end beach access, and I would appreciate to see something that was kind of artsy and playful and related to the beach.
Take you on a tour, and you will go tell the where are they still located all the way out in the
where
are they located, their main place?
Florida Power and Light. So they moved up to Juno Beach in the mid-80s. So they have what's called the GO building in Flagler, where my dad first started working, but then they transferred everybody up to a very large corporate headquarters in Juno Beach.
So they're not here.
Hardly.
But again, the lifespan of the wood as well. I mean, it requires maintenance and replacement. And,
I don't know about that.
I had a similar concern, you know, and I do think that the, you know, the posture to make it speak to the cabana language of the architecture inside the garden makes good sense. I was looking for water drainage, and I do see it's called out on the drawings. So you've got scuppers on either end,
correct?
And that it's to, you know, take the water down inside of the wood, so
correct.
It doesn't
so
go outside
be,
of
yeah,
the wood. So
it'll be hidden. It will be hidden so that the wood essentially just covers that, and it's tied into that visually. Right. So the wood is going to be an ipe wood, which is very hardy wood and long has a long lasting quality to it. So the intent is obviously, you know, it does need to be maintained, and it will be. Obviously, because the intent here is that this structure appeals or looks to tie itself into the other cabana structures that are right. just adjacent to it.
So I think that, you know, to Stuart's point about, you know, something more playful, you know, if it was a masonry structure that, you know, had some Art Deco language or some playful features, that would be kind of one approach. I think this is another approach that's very reasonable, too, as long as that maintenance is kind of built in
correct.
To it.
Correct.
And, you know, the selection of wood, I'm glad to hear you say that it's ipe, it's a very durable wood.
Absolutely.
And it means it's not going to be painted, it's going to have a natural finish.
It has a
probably.
Natural finish, it will weather, and it holds up.
And yes. So I wonder, is there, you know, in the order, is there to be some language about the maintenance so that it's kind of built in as part of your commitment, you know, to build it, it's in the public realm to ensure that it is maintained over the years. And maybe that's something that we can add into the language. I don't know, Debbie, what you might think
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I think the applicant would agree.
We do.
To accept a condition that it shall be maintained, and if there's any maintenance violations, that they would return to this board to give the board an update.
Yes.
Is the ipe 2x? Excuse me. Is it 2x?
Yeah, it will be okay. A hardier dimension, so we're going to tie it in visually too.
I'll tell you, there's a very cool, there's a nice ipe fence on a maybe a house I'm not so excited about, on La Gorse in about 53rd, 54th, and it's only one by. Ipe is
durable.
Is durable, to put it mildly.
It is.
Forked with it. And I agree, you can take a lot of approaches here. And I think this is a valid, clean approach.
Okay, if there's not any more comment, would somebody like to make a motion?
I'll move to approve it with staff's recommendation, adding the condition that the EPE cladding be maintained, and should any maintenance issues arise, that it would be brought back before the HPB.
Okay, that was I'll a second motion. That. And we have a second. Let me.
How will something like the maintenance of the EPE be enforced over time, like on the roof of the building? It's covered in the EPE wood. Let's say people throw trash on top of the wood and it accumulates. People aren't going to see it from the ground, but they might see it from the hotel looking down on it. Who's going to know unless somebody climbs up on a ladder on top of that?
Wouldn't the neighbors complain? They would go to code compliance.
Correct.
If they see it.
That would be and even garbage or that type of thing would be a property maintenance violation.
Yeah, and please understand that the roof will be, first of all, the panels that are shown there are going to be able to be removed because you do have to maintain the roof. Okay, so periodically, FPNL will make sure that their roof is properly maintained. So that's going to be a requirement already. Plus, the hotel staff would obviously be, it's in their best interest to make sure that there's no debris there, things thrown around. They want to maintain it as a very clean area that people are going to use on a daily basis.
But what I'm thinking is that if there's wood panels, it just gives spaces for things to accumulate and get underneath it. But it's harder. I'm thinking about the roof.
Right. But that panel, again, be able to be removed and cleaned out if something were to be seen there, because you still have visual access from other parts of the structure. The building itself, you'll be able to be looking down. Our intent was to, again, make it feel and the look of the other cabanas that are there. That's why we're putting the wood cladding.
The maintenance condition can specifically call out the roof as well, to give emphasis to it, to address the steward's concern.
Just to echo, Mr. Reed, just to echo what Ray is saying, every roof requires maintenance. There's no such thing as a maintenance-free roof. So The hotel and the maintenance staff, they have, you know, rigorous checklists where they go and maintain all the roofs. And this roof would be no different, where periodically you're going to have people that are going up there. It's a, you know, fully staffed commercial establishment. So there'll be maintenance is part of the program that they're going to execute.
So, I mean, I'm happy to add to the motion, including the roof.
I think we could have a condition that says the entire FPNL building shall be maintained in accordance with the minimum required maintenance standards, including the wood cladding, and any violation for property maintenance of this building shall require the applicant to appear before the board, at which time the board could discuss potential material modifications.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah. We just need two motions here, one for the COA.
I believe, Mr. Pascal, you made the motion for the certificate of appropriateness.
COA, correct.
Okay.
Is that okay with you, Stuart?
I'm just trying to be a helpful member, and I was thinking that things could accumulate between the slats and could pose maintenance issues, so I'm trying to be helpful so that you have a better design.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, and we have a second to that motion. Mr. Lopez, I will call the roll. Ms. Liebman? Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Pascal?
Yes.
And Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay. That is approved for the certificate of appropriateness. Now we will need a separate motion for the setback variances.
We'll move to approve the variance for the setback.
Okay. And there's two variances, one for the building setback and one for the oceanfront overlay setback.
Can they go as one motion?
Yes.
Okay.
So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, I will call the roll. Mr. Reed? Ms. Weinstein-Berman?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Pascal?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. Great. The variances are approved.
Thank you all for
Thank
your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Your details on the landscape, the tags don't reference the details that they call out.
No.
So someone
take
might
care
notice
of
it.
We'll take care of that. Thank you. We'll take care of that.
Debbie, can I just, Mr. Chair, can I, it is my question with regard to FPL moderating their ask. I mean, is there any communication from this board that would help to exert any pressure or possible consideration?
I think also, I mean, because I sympathize with this. I deal with this on every single project, and it's also a resiliency concern because FPL is making us build these.
Right.
They're temporary. These are not permanent structures because they will be eventually infiltrated due to sea level rise. And if preservation and resiliency at the city level could work with FPL and essentially, yes, the state of Florida, the Florida Building Code Review, it'll take years to do. But, you know, it's such a massive issue, and to have these temporary solutions is just, it makes it so backwards, and it's an incredible waste of money and time for everyone.
Laura, would an alternate that would be more resilient, what would that look like? Like this thing, this.
Well, the issue is, yeah, the issue is FPL does not, they want everything at grade, so it's easy to access, which is, makes total sense. However, you're building something that has a lifespan of 5, 10, who really knows what that is. And in addition, you have the historic criteria that is, you know, very stringent. We want to protect the aesthetic from public view, and it's not feasible to do. There's nowhere to put these these structures. You're asking for a 40 by 15 structure. So, you know, I think it's a holistic, very complicated issue, and we're kind of every property owner is piecemealing these solutions, and then on top of that, you throw generator requirements, and it becomes a massive issue. So I don't know if city staff or the mayor potentially to look at this, but for example, in historic resiliency criteria, there are some I don't know if for grandfathering in or forbearance for certain flood issues, flood criteria that have to be met. Maybe potentially that's something that FPL or the Florida Building Code can start to consider with these extremely unique conditions we have as a barrier island with a significant, you know, almost 30% of our structures are under historic purview. So, I would love to see some proactivity on the list of, you know, many resilient, where that resiliency, feasibility, historic, long-term, holistic, functioning of the city goes. It's extremely important.
I think we have a request for an update on, I don't know if any of the board members have anything further, but I believe we did receive a request for an update on the Deauville Hotel situation. So I don't know, after the board's discussion on, what was it now at all? It's all blurring. I guess that was at the January meeting. The City Commission also discussed possible options, and the City did agree with one of the board's discussion regarding the possibility of getting an independent structural engineer. That is something that the Planning Department has been and is currently pursuing. We have been in contact with several structural engineers. Some have declined our request, and we have received responses which we're going through now to determine the feasibility of moving forward with that. The city attorney's office has also been active in terms of renewing motions in front of the judge. I believe we are currently confirmed for a February 23rd hearing. It's important to note that this is private property. The city does not have the right at this point to access the property, whether with a structural engineer or for any other purpose. We will be asking the court to grant us that access. And so those are really the two updates that we have for you. We are, aggressively pursuing the demolition by neglect lawsuit that was filed in 2019. Nothing has changed in that aspect, but we are, working very hard to try and take your recommendations as well as the City Commission's direction as quickly as possible. I also personally wrote to the property owner to request that items that could be safely removed that have significance be done so and be stored properly. I haven't read through it this morning. I just received a response from the property owner's representative that denied that request to access the property to look more carefully at the public interior spaces in terms of historical documentation. So we are moving forward to the best of our ability.
I do have a question. Just because this is not a legislative body. Are commissioners or the mayor, are they looking at updating the demolition by neglect language legally? Because I think a lot of the concern is that it's outdated language and in a way not necessarily incentivizing demolition by neglect, but it's not the penalty for certain properties that, have a $5,000 a day maximum fine is absurd for a property that is worth hundreds of millions of dollars in land value alone.
And I can speak to that. There are two issues. One is that under state law, there's a statutory maximum on what we can set for code enforcement violations. So, but on the other hand, a member of the City Commission has proposed imposing criminal penalties for violation of the demolition by neglect ordinance, and those have either been referred to the Land Use Committee or are pending referral to the Land Use Committee of the City Commission. But we believe that's one area where we can make things a little tougher. We also have, in recent years, amended the Historic Preservation Ordinance to provide that any time a contributing building is demolished without a certificate of appropriateness from this board, we've made it a presumption that the building can only be replaced with a building of the same size, unless that presumption is rebutted. Another member of the City Commission, it's the same member of the City Commission, is looking into maybe strengthening our requirements for when replication is appropriate, if in fact in this particular case, it's appropriate that's a separate consideration for this board to make at a duly noticed public hearing, but we are looking at changes to the Historic Preservation Ordinance.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask for clarification. So the owners have declined to commit to preserving any portions of the building. Other question was about the 3D scan, so none of that's happening. Is that correct?
Oh, I can give you another update. Thank you, Kirk, very much. We have completed an exterior 3D scan. On Friday of last week, I met with our consultant who showed, walked us through. It's really incredible how much accurate data we have. He kind of showed us how to measure things, and it's extremely precise to the point where You know, you'll note that there's a quarter of an inch difference on certain floor heights, really fascinating. They were able to, even given the limited access to the property, they were able to, with drone technology from the beach walk, from Collins Avenue, obtain a significant record of the as-built conditions of the building. So that has been completed. We're very happy with that final product.
What is the format of that final product?
So we have the point cloud files, okay, which are, you know, a little bit foreign in terms of a layperson understanding that. But that is, and I forget how many millions of point clouds. I mean, the thing is so massive that a regular computer can't even handle all of the data. We also have a three-dimensional model. So those are the formats. I know we previously discussed about two-dimensional drawings. That could be a next step, taking that data, taking the model, and actually producing elevation drawings. Floor plans would be somewhat trickier given our limited access to the interior of the building. But certainly, from my perspective, we have an extraordinary collection of historical documentation, now current documentation, probably more so than any building that I can, you know, think of off the top of my head in terms of accurate original documentation as well as current documentation. So I think, you know, that it's not a, you know, any sort of consolation if we lose the building. However, it will create more options moving forward when that time comes, if that time comes.
That's great news, Debbie. My other question was with regard to the hearing that is scheduled for February 23rd. Is that sort of like a one-day thing, or the hearing begins then? What's anticipated as far as the process is concerned?
So I'm not personally handling that litigation, but I can tell you what it is. It's a hearing on the city's amended motion for contempt and for sanctions, and our renewed motion for the appointment of a receiver. It's just on those requests, and it's scheduled for the 23rd at 3 p.m.
Thank you.
What I'm not familiar with is the process with the building official. Now, there was a demolition order issued by the building official, so forget the legal process or potential legislation. How does that move forward, and where is that right now?
Well,
my understanding is once a demolition order is issued by the building official, that's a demolition order.
But it's not demolished yet. The order was issued several weeks ago.
Right. And we do not anticipate any demolition taking place for many months. I believe the building official, referring to the ANESTA structural report that was submitted, believes the building needs to come down prior to June 1st, which would be the start of hurricane season. So from my knowledge, which is not a ton when it comes to you know, the demolition order, is that the building is not an imminent threat and is not going to be taken down today or tomorrow, that the property owner is going through a process. To demolish such a large structure is not something that is typically done overnight, and is going to take several months, which I think is why the planning department is working with the city attorney's office to get as much work done in terms of your recommendations and the city commission's recommendations as possible, including, reaching out to the property owner, asking them to do certain things that were recommended, reaching out to independent structural engineers to see if we can move forward with that process, because we do believe, although it doesn't look like we have a significant amount of time, we should have, I would say, at least several, you know, months before any action would be taken in terms of demolition work.
And I can just add that the permit is in applied status. It's not yet been approved.
Which permit? I guess at first they would need to have detailed plans for protecting nearby buildings and going to do with debris and air quality. But what else that might be besides safety, like specific to the site? Is there anything that they would have to do for the demolition order to be carried out?
I believe there's a noticing requirement. Again, I'm not an expert in the area, but I believe there is a noticing requirement. I believe there is also a significant amount of asbestos removal that needs to be done, which is not a quick process. That's the beginning of hurricane season. In the structural engineer's report that the city received, did reference that as potential for high wind events that could cause collapse of the building or partial collapse of the building. The planning department has reached out to several structural engineers to try and move forward with an independent evaluation. That is not an easy process. Whether it's a peer review or a full structural evaluation, ideally we would like access to the site. Even for a peer review, from my experience, engineers will typically require access to the site. That is something we have requested from the property owner. That is something the property owner at this point in time, at least, has declined to allow the city to access.
One of the pathetic things that's going on, there is, I think they're almost ready. There's a new building that is being built in the space next to it, and I know that they have they're able to go until the end of this year to put in place to keep their document is to allow them to go that far and get their project done. So is it real that these dates are going to be followed, or we may be here?
I don't know. I mean, we don't know because as Nick was just explaining, they don't actually have a demolition permit currently. So
who
we don't
have
the property owner, the owners of the Deauville have not had, they don't have an approved permit. They have, you know, an order was issued by the building official. They have applied for a permit. That permit has gone through reviews, but it has not been issued as of now. So I can't predict when that would be issued. You know, there's a lot of variables that could happen. You know, thinking optimistically, the property owner may decide to try and salvage portions of the building if that's possible. A lot of things could happen between now and when or if it gets demolished.
But I just like to add that at the hearing on the 23rd, the city attorney's office intends to address our request for access to the property for, you know, access for our independent structural engineer, and also to direct the preservation of any historic fixtures or other important interior decorative elements. So we intend to bring those, you know, to the court's attention at that same hearing on the 23rd.
And is there any protection, or is the building just there? Because in this city, there have been several middle of the night demolitions, and how do we know what's going to happen with that?
Well,
how do we protect
this? This should not be in a middle of the night demolition. I mean, God forbid, it could, you know, that would not be in accordance with a lawful demolition order or a demolition permit. If all of a sudden one day we woke up and it was gone, they have filed for the permit. If a permit is issued, there are notice requirements for surrounding properties. And there are other technical requirements that need to happen prior to demolition. So anything is possible.
Now, how much liability do they have for doing the wrong thing?
I think they have incredible liability. I couldn't imagine someone tearing down a building
at 2 o'clock right. in the morning. No. They'd have to do it in two.
I don't know. Know the potential of how many people live in that building legally, you know, illegally, and my gosh, protecting the sidewalk, protect it, you know, somebody would be gutsy and foolish.
I think it wouldn't be one person.
Has anyone ever torn down a building that size illegally? Other than, I do question that one on Collins Avenue that kind of fell, but it was under
that was under construction.
And it was
correct.
Under work.
We've had construction accidents that have resulted in collapse.
We had a single.
We've had fires. We've had fires that have resulted in very significant damage. But those are the only catastrophic things that come to mind. Construction accidents are probably the most common. And then occasionally we do have fires in our historic buildings, whether they're occupied or unoccupied.
Yeah. But oops, the building could fall down.
And it doesn't change whether they obtain an emergency or a demolition order and have a permit issued, or if it just falls down in the middle of the night. It doesn't change the after-the-fact certificate of appropriateness regulations, because either of those circumstances result in a building being demolished without a certificate of appropriateness being approved by this board. So the process for the after-the-fact review would remain the same, regardless of how it's demolished. If it doesn't have prior approval of this board, it goes through the after-the-fact process.
That's how.
Is there any other business before we close?
We have
a hand up in the audience. Daniel, you have something to add?
Well, yes, thank you. On this one, I did have a question. Daniel Serrato with Miami Design Preservation League. Just as far as, like, the city is interviewing engineers and MDPL is as well, we're trying to get some quotes for our own independent analysis. So, Debbie, I was just wondering, because I know some of the engineers we're talking to are talking to the city, when do you think you all will make your decision? Because that will then free up, you know, the universe of who we can.
Sure, and that's a good question. I would think soon. I have personally reached out to 6 engineering firms. We heard back from 3 or 4. One or two declined to even continue a discussion, and we've had 2 submit a response very recently. So Daniel, we're going to be discussing internally. There's, you know, a lot of issues, budgetary issues and procurement issues, but we are moving forward as fast as possible, and I will connect with you once we've made any decision.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And then you're chairing, but before we the meeting ends, I want to suggest something to put on the agenda for the next meeting, unless we have something else to discuss first. Okay, sorry.
Public comment, and then we'll come back to that.
Thank you.
Hi, Jack.
Mr. Chairman, this is not on that subject, so should I wait?
Yeah, and if we are, sorry to throw this out, but if we are taking public comment on that update, we do have several members on Zoom with their hands raised.
Okay, let's take those, and then we'll continue from there. Debbie?
Okay, members of the public on Zoom, I'm going to call on you to talk about the Doeville, if you have any comments. Elizabeth Latone.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I live next door, and I would like to understand my understanding is that there are $91,000 in unpaid taxes. Is that still true?
I don't know the current situation with regard to property taxes. I know there was an issue a while ago regarding the resort taxes, and I believe those were paid by the property owner.
Okay. I was just going to say that if there are any unpaid taxes at all, that falls into receivership. And I don't know. I just living next door to it for so long. I mean, it's been 17 years. And I don't understand how this has been allowed to happen. And well, obviously it's heartbreaking, but if there are unpaid taxes or city taxes or any of it, that allows y'all to enter. You can file an injunction to enter the property. And I would just suggest that, I mean, I'm sure things are being done, but I would suggest that that happen. And this is upsetting.
Okay. We have Tim Reed. Tim, if you would like to comment, please unmute yourself. Okay, hearing nothing from Tim, we have a phone number ending in 1295. Phone number 1295, if you would like to comment, please unmute yourself. Okay, our final speaker on Zoom is Tanya Bott. Oh, wait, is this 1295?
This is Tim Reed? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
This is Tim Reed. Thank you very much, and thank you to everyone. You can hear me now?
There's a bit of an echo. If you have two devices on, could you disconnect one?
Okay, thank you. You can hear me now, I guess.
Yes.
Hello? Yes, thank you. Thanks to everyone who's working so hard to save the Doeville. I want to check with you one more time. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, thanks very much. I'd like to address the elephant in the room here. This obviously is a scam by the owners. But I would like to say that when you go to the hearing, when you prepare the paperwork for the hearing on the 23rd, it should be brought to the attention that these owners are maybe the most notorious property owners in the United States, from Los Angeles to Las Vegas to Miami. They have a record that is absolutely unbelievable. They've been found guilty of destroying, demolishing unlawfully four buildings in Los Angeles. They've been caught for bribery in Miami. They have been caught for dozens of other crimes and civil offenses, but including a lot of crimes. I believe this should be brought to the attention, not only the public, but to the court, in the court papers, because this completely invalidates any justification that they are claiming to keep the city out of the building to inspect the building. I would also like to point out that the expansion joint claim is nonsense. It is not that expensive to separate the historic part of the building. And as you well know, this building is so historic that it will never be replaced. This is the only place probably in the world where the Beatles and JFK both appeared. And it goes on and on. Dozens of the greatest entertainers in the history of the world ever. It's going to be irreplaceable. The historic part, which includes the orchestra, the lobby, but most importantly, the Napoleon Ballroom, or most importantly, the stage, need to be saved. And the judge needs to be told, and the public, that the Morellos have a reputation, and the documentation is, if not already with you, is being sent to you very soon, of dozens of criminal offenses. This would be Richard Morello and Homero Jr., who also is the one who told you he thought he was doing the city a favor by wanting to tear down the building. And with regards to...
Sir, your 2 minutes are up.
Okay, our
sir,
next...
Sir, thank you for your comment. I don't think we got his name, though. Could we ask him to state his name clearly? Or was that too late?
We can't. Is
I think
still
he
on?
Said his name was Tim Reed.
You got it? Okay.
No relation, but I heard him.
Our next speaker on Zoom is Tanya Bott.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello,
yes.
Can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Okay, so I echo everything that Tim Reed said, and that is, in fact, his name spelled R-E-I-D. I'm sure most of you have seen many of my missives on this topic. It is completely a scam by the Morellos. They have let three independent development plans get approved by the city and lapse in 2008, 2013, 2015. They clearly don't know what they want to do next. All they are doing is destroying history. I could go on at length about that, but I will say that for another time. My question, Debbie, this might actually be to you if you could answer. I know you spoke earlier about the LIDAR scanning process. Have you uploaded the files in their entirety to verify that everything you have is usable, that nothing is corrupted, there are no glitches in the system?
We have viewed all of the data, and we just did that last Friday. It is a massive, massive amount of data, so it's not something that we can upload onto our current computers. We are obtaining an external hard drive to store the data on, but we have viewed it. It is comprehensive. It is complete. And we will be the owners of that information, which will, again, allow the city to have more options in the future for what is done with the property.
So just if I could just beg the lenience, Nick, for just a follow-up question on that topic, or I would really encourage that as soon as you have the backup drive and somebody who might down the road be responsible for reconstructing files based on that data, that you go through the exercise of just verifying that everything you have is actually usable, because the worst thing that could happen is, God forbid, this entire thing gets destroyed and somehow the files are not as complete or functional as we expected them to be. That would be a terrible, terrible problem that we could prevent by doing a little extra homework on the front side of that. And then the follow-up question is whether that same technology can be used if the Morellos refuse to grant access to determine the state condition and do measurements and renderings and whatever needs to be done of the architectural elements that could be salvaged and some of the cultural artifacts that are still there that could be salvaged. Is this technology something that can be used to do that, or is there some other kind of technology that can be used to sort of go through the walls with fancy X-ray specs to pull out the information that we need, barring any better solution? Thank you.
Yeah, Tanya, to your point, I'm not aware of any technology that can X-ray a building. You know, the point clouds, they do penetrate the building to a certain extent. That's how they get the floor-to-ceiling heights, because they can go through the windows to get those data points to for measurements. We are lucky because the building culturally was so significant that we have a very many historical photographs and videos. We also have more recent photographs of the interiors because, as Ms. Botts stated, there have been several Historic Preservation Board applications submitted in the past 10 years. So we are comfortable with the level of documentation in order to keep options, you know, open. No decision, no recommendation at this point has been made. There is no evidence before you as to what the future of this site will be. But we are comfortable that we will have all of the options available to this board or a future board once an application has been filed.
Okay, moving on. What's next? We had comment from Jack. Should we go ahead and hear the public?
If it's on a different matter, we don't have anything on the agenda. But if you want to discuss something that you want to bring back as a future agenda, you're more than welcome to. We're not. Nobody's kicking anybody out.
Okay.
At this point,
Mr. Finglas, welcome.
thank you. I'm Jack Finglas of Mid Beach, private citizen. Two things I'd like to discuss with you, upcoming events. The first is this Friday. The Land Use Committee, reconstituted Land Use Committee, is meeting, and if any of you could come, it probably would be very important because they're discussing the future of single-family homes, and it's been reconstituted probably not in a completely positive way for the subject matter. So we need as much public input as possible to try to save single-family homes. The other thing is from November, there was a joint meeting of the DRB and the HPB, and that's kind of grown silent, and we were promised that would be discussed at a future date. I don't know if that's going to be discussed on Friday or not, or if it's really at a future date, but we really can't let that, you know, rest. It's a really important issue, and DRB is very interested in moving that forward as well, and we really need to have a discussion maybe next month or whatever as to what we plan to do, because if you let it rest, it will quietly go away and die.
And thank you for bringing that up. There, that the joint board recommendations will be discussed on Friday. Should the Land Use Board take up the item? I know they have a lengthy agenda, but yes, we did provide an update with the joint board's recommendations. That's part of the agenda item with regarding single family homes. So that's, thank you for reminding
and that,
me.
That's at 9 o'clock on Friday in here.
Correct.
Is it
correct
going to be a Zoom?
I think it's a hybrid.
I think
so
it's a hybrid.
You can,
yes,
participate via Zoom as a member of the public.
Right.
Good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if there's nothing else.
Yeah, there's one thing.
Okay.
Yes, so
please.
For the next agenda, I'd like to have as a discussion item, and I'll send materials to city staff that we can all consider, about a new historic designation, the Collins Canal. I think it's the oldest man-made structure in the city, 1912, and it tells the history of the city, the early agricultural routes. It was built so that Collins had a more direct route to get his produce across to Miami. There are several historic districts that touch on the Collins Canal, the Collins Waterfront District, the Museum District, the 21st Recreation Street Recreation Center, and the Palm Palm View district, and I think it's a significant body of water besides historically, but as a potential recreational use, and also if it's managed properly. Right now, there are issues when jet skis come through, they shoot water up, it hits the bottom of the bridge. You see pictures where the concrete is eroding, and there's exposed rusted rebar under the bridges. The water is so shallow there that you see the bottom often, and I've seen spotted eagle rays and puffer fish. I recently, walking my dogs back there, saw a guy jump out with must have been a grouper, like the size of his torso. I kayaked back there years ago, and you see schools of mullet there. One mullet landed in my lap when they were jumping. So it's considering all the loss of seagrasses in Biscayne Bay, I think that the Collins Canal being a shallow, protected body of water, it might have opportunities for reestablishing seagrasses. I think if it was managed so that it was the silt isn't being drawn up by motorboats and all, it would be like an outdoor aquarium. It would be a great, and I think having a historic designation might create opportunities for getting funding from state and federal sources for historic and recreation and habitat restoration. So I'd like to be that on the next agenda.
Sure, we can put that on the next agenda. I will say that, and I'm not sure if the entirety, but there are significant portions of the Collins Canal that are within the boundaries of historic districts. So they are, you know, under the board's jurisdiction in terms of changes, but it's not individually designated. And it's something that, you know, we can bring back some information. I could also reach out to the Environment and Sustainability Department to see what types of initiatives they have with regarding the sustainability element and the, you know, renourishment. I know there's been a lot of activity with the mangroves and other initiatives that the city has embarked on regarding the Collins Canal. So we can bring back that information. I would request, due to the length of the March agenda, that we bring that back to you for April.
Okay.
If that works.
Sure.
Great suggestion.
Yeah, it is an incredible feature of this city, both environmentally and naturally and historically. It has huge significance. So I think that's a really great, positive topic that we can discuss.
I'd like to add something on the April agenda, if that be the case. People have asked me about the... fixing the and nobody knew. I didn't even tell Jack, so he doesn't know. I'm concerned. I've heard comments about it, and I didn't think about it till you just started talking about it. Now I can't. I will call you, and we can put it on. It has to do with the post office, the main post office.
Yeah, and that's something we've talked about, and we've reached out to the Postal Service. It was a couple years ago now.
Oh, a long time ago.
But I would be more than happy to discuss the condition of the post office on Washington Avenue.
Whenever. But it's really a shame because the city doesn't have any...
It's federally owned. It's federally property owned by the U.S. Post Office. We have discussed it in the past. We have reached out to the Postmaster General to express some concerns we have regarding the maintenance of that building. But I think I'm more than happy to talk about it again. You know, Jake and I will try to also go out there and reassess. If any work has been done, at some point we were contacted by them, and we were hopeful that they were going to make some improvements. in repairs. It is. It is.
It is
exceptionally architecturally and historically significant building.
Totally.
In the Flamingo Park Historic District. Yeah, it's.
How long
it's
ago
worth,
did you do that? When you.
It must have been 3 years ago or more, and then we were contacted by someone in the Postmaster General, probably 2 or 3 years ago. But I'm not aware of any recent permits or any recent significant maintenance activity. But we can look into it, and I can research that and report back about the current status of any repairs or other work that may be in the pipeline.
But do we have anything other than that? It's not a city project.
It's not a city property. It's federally owned, so we don't have the right to go in and perform our own work on the property. Correct, and because it would be federal money that would be being spent, you would have all sorts of other, which I know, Mr. Klein, you're familiar with, reviews in terms of environmental review and a historic preservation review. The state would be involved, and so no, I don't believe there are any plans for demolition or any plans that I'm aware of currently.
And we as a city don't have the ability to inform them, because the place is a mess, and to cite them for that?
Yes, we can, I believe. I don't think there's any prohibition on property maintenance violations. I can also look to see there may be current violations on that property.
The challenge is we can't lean them. We couldn't lean a superior government to our own. So we may be able to issue them citations, but we might, Debbie, have more luck reaching out to them direct. Maybe it's the postmaster for Miami or reaching out to them directly.
A little note of history. When I first started being active in this community, the guy who was running that post office at the time went to jail. That was the last time I heard anything about it. It could be they never replaced anybody, and it's still just a wide open, awful place. So, April. Good. It's good.
Okay,
a motion to adjourn. Okay, we have adjourned. I will see everyone in March 8th.